Hey everybody, what's going on? Josh Wigler here with a couple of things to let you know before we get into today's podcast. First thing to let you know is, hey, guess what? Post Show Recaps is on Patreon. That's right. Post Show Recaps has launched a Patreon. We're really excited about this new effort from the Post Show Recaps community where we are on Patreon, where you can become a patron of the show, support the show at whatever level you are comfortable. You can go to postshowrecaps.com/Patreon or postshowrecaps.com/patron or patreon.com/postshowrecaps to find out what it means to become a supporter of this show. Just to tell you up front, what that means is nothing's changing. Front facing all of the shows that you love, Lost Down the Hatch, everything is super, Lovecraft Country, Walking Dead, hang in there, everything that we've been doing, all of that is going to remain for free. This is just a way for you to show support for the show, should you be able to afford it, should you be interested in it, with a bunch of perks along the way, including a new patron-only podcast feed. Emily Fox and I are going to be launching a weekly movie club on the patron-only podcast feed called Post Show Recaps Theater. It's a different movie every single week, community driven, going to be super, super, super fun, and a bunch of other perks as well, including the Post Show Recaps Discord, which is going to be our community hub, really fun way to interact with each other, way to interact with us, the hosts. So I hope you're excited about that. I hope that you can join us. We're so appreciative of anyone who is able to do that. No pressure. If you're able to do it, it's great. If you're not, totally fine. We're still going to be doing what we're doing here. So that's thing number one. Thing number two is, so let me tell you a little bit about what you're about to listen to today. The Patreon is launched. We've been very pumped about that. We wanted to come up with a podcast that would really celebrate this, as something that was really important to us and want to make this a fun event for everybody. So we were brainstorming, like, what should we do? What's the best way to do this? And you know what? At a certain point, there was this eureka moment of like, hey, you like dinosaurs? I like dinosaurs. Everyone likes dinosaurs. Jurassic Park. Should we talk about Jurassic Park? I don't think we've talked about Jurassic Park on Post Show Recaps before. I don't think that's a thing that's happened, at least not as a central focus. So what if there's a way to talk about Jurassic Park and also show off why Post Show Recaps is such a ridiculous place to choose to spend your time? And that is what we're aiming for in this very strange, surreal Jurassic Park, the podcast that you are about to embark upon. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you have a great time. It's certainly very fun to put together. For those who do not enjoy this one, I'm really sorry that I'm not that sorry about it. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. I think this is a fun ride. All right, let's get into it. Jurassic Park is over, and it has been for a while, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. It's Jurassic Park, the podcast. That's right, Jurassic Park, the podcast. I'm Josh Wigler. I am joined here by the Mr. DNA to my John Hammond. I don't know, Rob.
Don't call me Mr. DNA ever. Do not live that. I do not want that. Do not want.
You don't want that?
I am not Mr. DNA.
I feel like your voice with Mr. DNA animation would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I think like the prolific entrepreneurial animation gurus in our podcast audience could mm-hmm. do a good job of turning you into a Mr. DNA instructional video.
Sure, but please I do not want my name to be Mr. Don't call me Mr. DNA.
Okay, I won't do that. Rob, can you believe it? At long last, how many years have we been talking about Jurassic Park the podcast now?
Oh, easily six.
Yeah, six. And Post Show Recaps is celebrating its seventh birthday in January.
Yes.
So this has really basically been an idea of ours since the inception of Post Show Recaps. And of course, this is Jurassic Park, the podcast. It's a celebration of Jurassic Park. It's a movie we love. It's a pop culture phenomenon. There's no real anniversary reason to be talking about Jurassic Park. but it just feels like, hey, this is something that we all love. It's something we cherish. Why don't we find an opportunity to sort of just like, I don't know, freeze ourselves in amber and wax poetic about one of the great films of the 1990s.
Yes, as I used to say, a mosquito and amber are going to do it. And then that is where they will get the dinosaurs from.
Yeah. Is that really where they came from?
What, the dinosaurs?
Yeah.
I think so. In Jurassic Park, yeah, certainly.
Jurassic Park. I didn't know if Boston Rob had anything to do with it, but that'd be compelling. That'd be a bit of a twist. Rob, of course, we have also launched the Post Show Recaps patron program here. We're very excited about this. I could not have done this without you, Rob. This is something we've been talking about doing for a couple of years now. With your leadership, with your partnership, we are now launching the Post Show Recaps Patreon program, which is available for people to sign up at postshowrecaps.com/patron, postshowrecaps.com/patreon. And as we were talking about, what can we do to celebrate the launch of the new patron program? Like, we've been talking about Jurassic Park, the podcast, for years. Why don't we do it on the same day? Why don't we give the people what they never knew they always wanted? And so that is what brings us to your ears today.
A historic day to talk about all of the Jurassic perks that are available to patrons yes. of Post Show Recaps. It's a very exciting day, Josh.
Yeah. So go to postshowrecaps.com/patron or postshowrecaps.com/patreon. You can find out more about becoming a patron of Post Show Recaps, but let's talk about Jurassic Park, Rob. You're a smidge older than I, about 5 years or so. You were probably more age appropriate to see Jurassic Park in theaters than me. I have my memories of being in a visiting family out in San Diego and watching, which I believe is
really
the site of the climax of The Lost World, of the sequel. Pretty sure that's where the blockbuster is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Vince Vaughn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nick Van Owen. Is his character. I was in San Diego. I was way too young to be seeing Jurassic Park, 1993, so that places me at like 8 years old, something like that. Old hat at this point, had already gotten Terminator 2 under my belt, and I loved it. Obviously, I was hook, line, and sinker for Jurassic Park. How old were you, if you can recall your age during Jurassic Park? What memories do you have of seeing this one?
So in the summer of 1993, I guess I would be 15 years old. Yeah. And I recall going to see it. We started a drive-in on Long Island. I'm not sure at what point did this go out of business. But I remember my parents took us, and it had not been we would not go like opening weekend. This had been out for a while. I feel like that the drive-in, not a super great place to go see Jurassic Park. I feel like so much of it is
trapped down in the car.
No, but I feel like so much of it was like the sound and I think you want to be in the theater with hearing it super loud and not like on your like radio, FM radio in the car.
Yeah. I also just feel like if I was watching it in a car, I would be triggered by the scene with the T-Rex wrecks the Jeeps, and the Jeep falls out of the tree. I would not be comfortable watching
that. So I think the deal was you would like sit in like a lounge chair. Okay. Like you would bring like folding chairs to watch the movie.
But they have like ushers show up and they warn you, like, you might want to get out of the car now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this could be very upsetting for you to sit there in the car.
So you watched it, you went to a drive-in, you loved it, you liked it. How did you feel about Jurassic Park at the time?
Yeah, I think I felt fine about it at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was, it was a really big deal, 1993.
It's dinosaurs. It's gigantic dinosaurs that even like you go back and you watch it now. And even by today's standards, I feel like it is one of those movies where the special effects actually, it feels like it holds up. Maybe it's because of just sort of like the realism to how some of these like chase sequences are shot, or it's the way that the actors are reacting to the dinosaurs for the first time, or even just because like the characters are so good. I feel like that you even by like 2020 standards, you could go back and watch Jurassic Park and you would still feel like, oh man, all of that still really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why they keep remaking it. People still like to see dinosaurs And
have you watched the sequels, the Jurassic Worlds?
I have had them on. I don't think I've ever sat through them uninterrupted.
Yeah. Have your kids checked out Jurassic Park yet?
They watch a lot of Lego Jurassic Park.
What happens in Lego Jurassic Park?
People get eaten by dinosaurs. I mean, it's the same thing that always happens at Jurassic Park. Somebody thinks like, hey, this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make a park with dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And then the dinosaurs inevitably get out. It's a tale as old as time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why people keep going back to the well on this idea. It's never once worked out well. Let's have a zoo for dinosaurs.
How would you do if you were running a zoo for dinosaurs?
I would shut it down.
You wouldn't even start.
I would shut it down. Maybe I'd have like only baby dinosaurs. I think that would be cute.
Yeah.
But at the point where, you know, you're like, hey, now let's make the T-Rex.
Right.
No. You can make the Stegosaurus, make the Brontosaurus. Like, I would only make the plant-eating dinosaurs.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But hey, should we make the King of the Reptiles? No. Let's you know what? Maybe that's season two. Let's start with Triceratops, maybe.
Yeah. It's stage one. It's like the 1.0 is the plant eaters. Maybe the 2.0 is the meat eating dinosaur.
Then maybe make a pterodactyl next. That would be cool. And then last would be, even though I am a Raptors fan of the basketball.
I heard. Yeah.
But maybe Raptors, and then last step would be T-Rex. I don't even know why you need one.
Let's say like you're John Hammond's age. So you're an older man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been thinking about doing something great and ambitious like Jurassic Park your entire life. Let's say you have the audacity to not only record podcasts on Audacity, but you have the audacity to create plant-eating dinosaurs, meat-eating dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Would you then believe that you'd have the audacity to invite your family members to Jurassic Park? Like Dominic and Anthony's children, would you bring them at that point in the future to Jurassic Park as an old man?
See, this is a hard sell for me, because I think that as the grandparent that I think that all grandparents, that they love grandchildren, because then they leave, like, you know, they're basically, it's like the perks of having kids of like, oh, I love them. And then they go home. And that's why, you know, grandparents want grandchildren that they
Grant,
want
it's Dr. like, grandparents.
Yeah, it's like, hey, here's this, I get all the good, and then you take them, you change the diapers, you do all the, you know, you do all the bad stuff, they go home. That's the ideal. So it's really, if I was the other people working at Jurassic Park, I would not want, oh, great, I work for this guy and he's bringing the whole family in. Now we have to all play with the grandkids now at Jurassic Park. And you know that they're running around the place. Timmy's like, hey, Newman, one day I'm going to own this whole place.
You love Timmy, though.
I mean, of the two kids,
Timmy and Lex.
There's Timmy and there's Lex. Lex is cute.
She's a computer hacker. You know, she saves the day.
Yeah. Yes. Not a lot of 12-year-old computer hackers.
No. She was Ms. Robot before Mr. Robot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have her brother, Timmy, the less popular of the two Jurassic Park kids.
On what standards is he the less popular of the two kids? Do you think like that's the popular perception, is like Lex is the good one, Timmy's the bad one?
Yeah, I think you remember the girl. She's like holding the Jell-O. She was like adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Mazzello.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. He was in Justified.
Yeah.
He was on The Pacific. He's still out there. I actually saw him on the red carpet at the Mr. Robot final season premiere.
Did you ask him about Jurassic Park?
No, he didn't stop for me. He stopped for our mutual friend, Andrea Belke.
Yes.
He was there for People.
So yeah.
Like they knew each other. I don't know.
Maybe she's been to Jurassic Park.
He's team Timmy over team Lex.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you have something against Joseph Mazzello?
I don't have anything against him personally, uh-huh. but I just feel like that have these kids at Jurassic Park. They're for no reason other than to make us feel like that they're going to get eaten. I wasn't worried the whole time that I was hoping the dinosaurs would eat the kids.
Yeah. That was your desire. Why? Like,
I was like, hey, leave Sam Neill and Laura Dern alone.
Uh-huh.
maybe they'll catch one of these kids and then they'll be satiated. They won't go after Jeff Goldblum.
There's like no part of you that would have been like horrified to watch poor Timmy get just like swallowed up by a T-Rex or eviscerated by a Velociraptor.
Not Timmy. Lex was, you know, she was the cuter kid of these two.
Yeah. Yeah. Timmy would have really bothered you.
I mean, I'm just saying I wouldn't have cried if he would have been eaten by the dinosaur.
I don't know. I feel like it's a hot take.
Yeah. Look.
You're like Dr. Grant himself who didn't like the kids very much.
I would have been fine if Samuel L. Jackson lived, if Newman lived, Timmy, I wouldn't have cried.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's fine.
All right.
Okay. He wasn't that great.
Okay. All right. I mean, but he knows a lot about dinosaurs.
So does every kid. Yeah. Have you ever talked to a 8-year-old?
I haven't talked to Dominic yet, but he's 8 now, right?
He's 7 now.
Oh, he's 7.
He can tell you all about dinosaurs.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that's not impressive. A little boy that knows about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
That's like par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little girl that knows about computers and how to hack a system.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
Bring something to the table, Timmy.
Yeah. Rob, I don't know if you want to stop down for a second. It just seems like your internet connection is a little, speaking of computers and someone maybe needing to fix your computer, it just seems like a little glitchy right now.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything except like the last thing that you said right now.
Oh, really? Okay. Do you want to stop down? Do you want to just check your internet connection, make sure everything's cool?
You know, my kids, speaking of dinosaurs, my kids are streaming Dino Dan on two different Apple TVs right now. And I told them that they're using all my bandwidth. I don't have Lex the hacker here.
Yeah.
Let me, Josh,
maybe you need to go investigate that. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me go see if I need to like just reboot my router or punish everybody.
Okay.
Do you mind if I just step away?
No. Totally fine. I'll just hang out and just wait for an update from you.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Okay. I want to talk about the part where Jeff Goldblum is messing with the poop.
Okay. We'll get there in a second.
Okay.
Hey, folks, Josh just chiming in here. I have not been able to get back in touch with Rob. That's very it's concerning, obviously, but I guess like, you know, something, you know, the streaming, his kids streaming must have just really tanked his internet. So I feel like we recorded a good like, what, 15 minutes of Jurassic Park conversation. So I want to keep the podcast going. I am going to see if somebody else is available to fill in for Rob on this one. I can think of no one better and more readily available on any given day than my great Lost Down the Hatch co-host, Mixmaster Mike Bloom. Let me see if I could just dial him up.
Ahoy, hoy.
Hey, Mike, it's Josh. How's it going?
Good. Did I miss something? Are we recording Down the Hatch today? Do you really want to talk about Stranger in a Strange Land this early on?
No. So, I actually have are you free right now? Do you have a little bit of time?
Yeah.
I need maybe like if you've got like, I don't know, anywhere from like an hour to an hour and a half or so.
Josh, for you, I would take a day and a day and a half. What are we talking about? So, are we doing another Lost thing?
No, well, not really. Another island adventure thing. So so you know that we're launching the Potion Recaps Patreon.
Of course.
The Potion Recaps Patreon, and in fact, has launched by the time this podcast is going to drop. It's going to be available at PotionRecaps.com/patron or PotionRecaps.com/patreon or patreon.com/PotionRecaps. And you can go there. and you can sign up at whatever tier that you're comfortable with to support the podcast, get access to the patron-only podcast feed where we're going to be doing a lot of fun bonus podcasts. And Rob and I had talked about doing a podcast that would kind of like land on October 1st, which is when we've launched the Patreon, that will, you know, get people excited about the Patreon, but also, you know, just like a fun thing to talk about for a while. And so we were going to do a Jurassic Park podcast. Because everyone loves Jurassic Park.
Of course.
But he had to go. And his schedule is so busy that I don't know if he was going to be able to get a chance to come back. So I figured if you're around, I would see if you wanted to talk about Jurassic Park with me.
Listen, I will gladly be the lost world to Rob's OG movie.
That means you're Ian Malcolm. You're the Ian Malcolm of podcasting.
I mean, listen, I do have a very similarly structured face and I do stutter a bit. So I guess of all the comparable characters that would make the most sense, you know, I would probably rather talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger and King Lear, which was seen in a blink and you missed it gag in that movie, than the outright lost world. But if we're talking about the OG Jurassic Park film and none that came after it, I am willing to make a meal out of that. You're putting a goat right in front of me, and unlike the T-Rex, I'm going for it.
You're going for it. All right, okay. So I mean, if you're cool with it, I guess we can just start. Before I was talking with Rob about like some of his memories of Jurassic Park, so we could start there. What are your memories of Jurassic Park? What's your experience like with this, you know, groundbreaking piece of pop culture?
I mean, it's interesting because we just, you know, mentioned The Lost World, which is sort of the comparable situation to the pile of Triceratops shit in terms of sequels. But that was actually the first Jurassic Park movie that I saw, because the original Jurassic Park came out when I was 4 years old. And despite the lovable dinosaurs that were, you know, gracing the screens during that period, you know, my parents might have pushed the boundaries a bit by having me see the sitcom dinosaurs, but that's about as far as we went in terms of me engaging with prehistoric creatures.
Earl Sinclair doesn't show up in Jurassic Park.
You know, I would imagine so, but I'm pretty sure the one of the brachiosaurus hit him on the head with a frying pan in the kitchen with the raptors, and unfortunately he's been taken out of commission. So admittedly, the first Jurassic Park film was actually the second one that I saw. And so, you know, there was a lot of context to be filled in. But what I remember seeing it was about at the age of, I want to say about 7 or so. And that really is the perfect age, right? That is like the Tim age, where you just have so much amusement and wonder at the idea that when things get really, really scary, it takes things right out from under you. As a kid, you know, you're really hard pressed to not meet a child at a young age who is obsessed or at least slightly interested in dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So again, it's hitting that demo. And when you take that image and you just warp it to say, hey, kids, you like dinosaurs? Well, here's what would happen if they were alive. You realize it's sort of like a monkey's paw or like a monkey's talon that Dr. Alan Grant is using.
But some of the dinosaurs are nice.
Some, not all. considering that the dinosaur-based pop culture up to that point were the aforementioned Sinclairs, Barney the Dinosaur, Boney from Wienerville, a Nickelodeon puppet show that has sort of slipped under the radar. So I feel like the dinosaur pop culture milieu was scanning like lawful to neutral good, and here we got a bunch of lawful evil animals coming out here trying to kill you.
Do you have, so Lost World's the first one you saw,
mm-hmm.
and then you saw Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. Was there like a formative moment across either of those movies that like you remember as like the first piece of Jurassic Park that like, when you think of Jurassic Park, is there like a scene that pops in your head? Like one in particular that like you go to that and that sort of like defines a bit of the wonder that emanates from this movie?
I'm going to cheat and say two. So the first one is going to be the basic bitch scene, but it's the first time that the crew, you know, watches the brachiosaurus, the apatosaurus, the long necks, I guess, if we're using Land Before Time parlance, because not only is it a wonderful expression of how really this movie, in spite of the whole CGI 1993 stuff, sufficiently holds up, surprisingly so, in the realm of visual effects, but just like the brilliant scores that's soaring like a pterodactyl combined with like the actual image itself of dinosaurs coming to life, as much as Michael Crichton might write about it, to actually see it visualized really is something to behold. And again, at that age, when it's something that only exists in your imagination, to see something play out in front of you is almost a reminder of like the limits or lack thereof that imagination can hit when it comes to creative pursuits. And so that's something that will always stick with me, just like watching your heart leap into your throat, watching these dinosaurs that were thought of extinct for such a long time actually visualizing themselves in front of them. But the other one that actually really stuck with me was the one of the big conflicts between Ian Malcolm and John Hammond. You know, the infamous, why your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they figured that you they could. That they stopped to think that they should, just because that's almost the opposite. If that is more of, if the first one's more about like the visuals and the soaring landscape of the film, quite literally, this is more about, you know, the dialogue and the characters and the themes, especially the ethical repercussions. And I love these two representations here, and especially Jeff Goldblum's performance, where he is, you know, smacking the table around and you know, talking about standing on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could. You patented it, you packaged it, you put it on a lunchbox. There was just something about that like machine gun delivery that Jeff Goldblum had, and the stuff that he was talking about, that really struck with me, even at a not even double digits age. So those are two scenes that are on completely different sides of the spectrum in terms of like cinematic nature, but I feel like they are equally representative of just how damn good this movie is. That some of these future films in the Jurassic Park franchise might have really fun action sequences. Some of them might have good characters and good dialogue. You'd be hard pressed to find one that has both as much as this OG one did.
You talk a lot about Ian Malcolm, not just the least of which is like you're the Ian Malcolm of podcasting, as we have established. Though I think like a lot of people would be like, I'm the Ian Malcolm of
podcasting. No, I mean, listen, me pointing and laughing at Malcolm getting voted out in Survivor Game Changers proves that I am the personification of chaos theory.
Yeah, speaking
I am the drop dripping down the back of the hand.
So I think that he's like the really, because he's Jeff Goldblum is just iconic. I think that he's like the really easy favorite character from this movie. But one of the things about Jurassic Park is it's just like it's stacked with characters. Like,
my God,
think about the laundry list of ridiculous actors and characters.
The laundry list.
Yeah.
I mean, so obviously, you know, you have your main two in Alan Grant and Ellie Sattler, and it's sort of interesting to see, especially from like a Laura Dern perspective, or especially like I feel like the past 5 years it has become all about Laura Dern, that you sort of forget that she was up, and not to say that Ellie Sattler was necessarily the most magnetic character, especially in that film, but it's crazy to think like where she came up. I feel like Alan Grant, it's interesting to have this main character played by Sam Neill have his own sort of mini arc. Sometimes that doesn't necessarily happen in an action movie. I feel like, and this will be done in much more Jurassic Park films, they ignore like the characterization of the main people and their own emotional journey over like dinosaurs,
right,
and big action sequences. But you know, we have Alan Grant start by saying, hey, I hate kids, I don't want anything to do with them, I'm going to stay away from them. And then he is the one sattlered with two kids,
one crazy weekend, and his whole outlook changes.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a fantastic arc. I mean, the one that really always gets me is John Hammond, and maybe it's just because like he really is just such a jolly grandpa. Like, yes, in retrospect, and the point that Ian Malcolm is making is that the things he's doing are really like borderline, you know, evil genius if you just change his hairstyle and his facial hair. But just the way that he is portrayed with just such a happy-go-lucky thing from when we first see him, you know, in Ellie and Alan's trailer, you know, grabbing drinks for himself. It's just, he has such a really light air about himself, and I love the Mr. DNA of it all, with him talking to himself on like the Disney World ride from hell. It's just such a fun performance that it allows you to look past maybe some of the other circumstances. And of course, you know, especially as someone who was getting into Seinfeld at the time, you cannot talk about Dennis Nedry.
Yeah, our lives are in your hands, and you have butterfingers.
I didn't say the magic word. It's because I think that's the great thing is that Wayne Knight, I mean, listen, I'm a big Wayne Knight fan. I loved him on Third Rock from the Sun. Even I like followed him over to that other NBC property. So I know that he doesn't always need to play the asshole, but he's always so good at playing the asshole. He's so, and so he is sort of like a form of like Newman working at the theme park here where he has his own nefarious motives, but there's the whole like troll stuff here with the, you know, when we first see him just sort of gorging himself with his Hawaiian shirts, just the way that he approaches everything with like a trollish aspect to him.
The whole like Dodgson, we've got Dodgson here is like, yeah. Nobody cares. Like that just feels like that's an indelible line read. Like a lot of his moments in this movie, even though he's short lived literally in the film, I think are just like, he is one of those characters that like he makes the most out of every single second that he's on screen.
And you could say the same thing about Samuel L. Jackson as well, because he is sort of put in this random role of like, here is random station worker who ends up dying. And not to say that he necessarily has like a big breakout like you might say a Wayne Knight has here, but he certainly brings his Samuel L. Jackson stuff to it. I don't think anybody in the world can sell Hold On To Your Butts as well as Samuel L. Jackson can, which is going to lead directly, I think, a direct corollary into I've had it with these mother effing snakes on this mother effing plane. It's just like a hop, leap, and a skip and an airplane to get him up there. So to your point, there are so many indelible characters, but also the dinosaurs too. That's the great thing about this as well.
They're characters as well, yeah
they don't just take the time to build out the personalities with the people, they build up personalities with the dinosaurs as well. We find out all this stuff about raptors, how brilliant they are, how they hunt in packs, how they are clever girls. That's the other thing. Muldoon, I mean, Muldoon is sort of just like a walking, talking, shooting accent, but he still is like very fun to hear his dialogue.
I mean, like, just think about like all of the character, like even like the most background of background players in Jurassic Park, like BD Wong is, you know, playing a relative background character, even though they've expanded
for now. Yeah.
Yeah. In the Jurassic World movies, like every single, even the technician who's there with the Triceratops with Ellie Sattler is from the Michael Crichton book, like a main character in the Michael Crichton book. Like it's just such a, it's not just like the rich mythology of dinosaurs, as Mr. DNA likes to call them, but just like the rich mythology of characters. I don't know why we haven't done a Jurassic Park Survivor Brant Steele yet. Survivor simulation featuring Jurassic Park characters, Mike, I think would be super fun to do.
What we call it, like a Grant Steele?
A Dr. Grant Steele?
Though he would have to play in it, right? Because I feel like if you look at the first movie's cast alone, like I feel like there's probably in barely enough human characters versus dino characters, so you could really see who reigns supreme. Like I feel like it's tough to say which one dominates because the dinos usually tear apart some of the humans, but it's not like all the humans die in each and every film, so they've been in a bit of a stalemate this entire time. A Survivor season could really determine. I mean, Jeff Probst loves to determine like the genuine winner of a conflict based on a Survivor season. Why not the existential question of, you know, could humans or dinosaurs win?
I feel like the host would have to be Jeff Goldblum, but Ian Malcolm is still like the character is still a character.
Could he be sort of like his Thor Ragnarok character?
Yeah.
Like he's sort of an overwatcher from that perspective.
No, that'd be incredible. I think I've had dreams, Mike, of Survivor doing a Jurassic Park theme. So maybe, you know, it sort of just writes itself.
Would the idols be like fossils, or would they be pieces of amber?
Yeah, amber. yeah, I think like the shelters would be like the rib cage of a dinosaur. I know that they, for Edge of Extinction, a lot of like the artwork that people were expecting was like more dinosaur based, and there was some talk about that, but. No, Survivor has yet to do the dinosaur season. It may be up to us, Mike, to do Survivor Jurassic Park sometime.
Yeah, I wonder, maybe the shelter can be like in one of those Jeeps, except it's the crush version that goes over
the
cliff.
The car curse. That's what you win.
Oh yeah, you don't want the car. You don't want to live inside the. Oh wait, Josh.
Yeah.
Hey, I hate to do this to you, especially since Rob just left you. I mean, speaking of huge pile of shit, we've got a bit of an emergency here with Asher.
Oh God, are you
no,
okay?
we're fine. It's just, it's going to require a quite a little bit of a lengthy cleanup. So I don't want to like, leave you hanging for a while. So is it okay if I jump off here? I'm so sorry. I know we just talked for like 15 minutes about Jurassic Park. No. I know that's not a podcast at all.
No, it was really good though.
Yeah.
I think we were like really digging into character and theme. Yeah, no, you got to do what you got to do. You go in and best of luck to what's going on. I'll talk to you in a couple days.
We'll talk in a couple days.
We're going to do Lost Down the Hatch. We're up to Stranger in a Strange Land, mm-hmm. the Jack Tattoos episode. So we'll catch back up. We'll talk about your tattoos, which you've just recently received.
Absolutely. And I'll also be mobilizing myself when myself and Jessica Lise get together in a couple weeks to wrap up Star Trek Lower Decks as we get ready for every episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 3, which is coming in mid-October. It's these podcasts are hatching like little baby raptors. That's another BR for you in our Grant Steele simulation. But I'm so sorry. I know the Patreon's super important, but
it's fine. I'll figure something out. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right.
Bye. All right. Well, I guess I'm alone again. Sorry, guys. I've been really pumped about Jurassic Park the podcast. I really want to make this work. I've been trying to do this for a couple of years now, and now Rob is gone and Mike is gone, and I guess I could just do a Jurassic Park podcast all by myself. I don't know. I mean, pretty clearly, using this as a space to tell you that Potion Recaps is on Patreon. This is a new thing. We're really excited about it. There's a couple of different ways for you to support the podcast through Patreon. You get different perks. Whatever's at your comfort level, or if you can't support the podcast through Patreon right now, that's totally fine. You're still going to get all the great podcasts that you love that are free right now. Will continue to be for free. Down the Hatch is going to stay free. I don't know. I'm starting to feel like a little guilty that like I put out a podcast called Jurassic Park the podcast with the pretty, naked intention of, just kind of peddling the Patreon. I'm feeling like a little bit of an ethical dilemma right now.
Did somebody say ethical?
Oh, Mr. DNAC Mazzaro, where did you come from?
In your brain, of course. I'm right here with you all the time. Josh, there may not have been two sets of footprints on the beach, but I was there with you the whole time.
Oh my God, it's Antonio.
I didn't mean to make that comparison, by the way. Talk about unethical.
Antonio Mazzaro.
Yes.
Is that you?
It is I.
Oh my God, just when I thought that I was... Wait, how did you show up? I didn't call you.
I was encased in amber inside a mosquito.
That's what it was. I found that on the street the other day and brought it inside.
That's exactly what happened. And here I am. I've been in your guest room just sort of reforming myself like one of those mattresses you get from a podcast take out of a box. And over a series of days, it becomes full size. So that's I've been doing.
Yeah. Antonio, that is so wild. I'm thrilled to have you both on a podcast, but specifically in my guest room.
Wait, what's up? We're podcasting?
Well, so here's what I've done.
I'm in your head, bro.
If anyone can hear you, then that's great. Otherwise, they're just going to hear me talking to myself.
Yeah, hopefully they can hear me.
Hopefully they can hear you too. So we're doing Jurassic Park the podcast right now. We're talking about Jurassic Park. We're talking about the film Jurassic Park, the 1993 film Jurassic Park. We're talking about the characters, Dr. Alan Grant, the chaos theorist Ian Malcolm, the great paleobotanist, I believe, Ellie Sattler. Is that correct? I think that's right. John Hammond, the Santa Claus of dinosaurs.
Not the musician.
Not the musician. Is there a musician, John Hammond?
There's more than one, actually.
Oh, how about that? and we're talking about all of that stuff, and the Dilophosaurus, and the multiple velociraptors, and Wayne Knight, aka Dennis Nedry, aka Newman. But there's like no anniversary peg to this. We're kind of just doing Jurassic Park the podcast. Both A, just because like we love Jurassic Park, and B, also because I know we've been talking, the Potion Recaps Patreon has launched, and so I wanted to come up with like a big podcast to put out there to spread the word that the Patreon is here, and if anyone wants to support it, they can go to PotionRecaps.com/patron or PotionRecaps.com/patreon if they want to support.
But
I'm feeling like, I don't know, maybe something pinged because you are my moral conscience that much like the ethical dilemma at the heart of Jurassic Park, I'm wondering if this is an instance of, I thought so much about whether or not we could do Jurassic Park the podcast that I didn't stop to think about whether or not we should.
Yeah, and look what happens as a result. What have you wrought? I am here. Yeah, this is a podcast. We're podcasting. I can cop to that at this point. We're there. But yeah, I think the ethical... I'd like to think that maybe I could be an ethical voice in your life from time to time. Although you have not really come to me with too many ethical quandaries. You seem to be a pretty ethical man yourself.
I just go bad.
You just go bad? You just go... You're always good and then occasionally just right to bad.
Yeah.
Put it to bad. Yeah. I haven't Breaking Bad. That's another topic for another time, perhaps. But that's not something I really associate with you. And I guess the question is, like, when you talk about the ethics of Jurassic Park and what they're doing in the park, what is bad? Is it bad? Is it bad that the security wasn't better? Like, is that the problem? The failsafe of having Wayne Knight there as the only guy who knows how to run the system, like, in the most dangerous place in the world? Like, this is not like a two-step certification at a minimum, I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
it's the 90s, dude, you know.
Right. I do know, because if you look at some of those desktop icons and computer models, you are very quickly reminded. And yet, Josh, I feel like genetic editing, CRISPR, like gene technologies, and the Human Genome Project in general are so far in the future. 20, 30 years down the line, this will be how we cure so many maladies that as a species we have not been able to overcome. We will figure out how to do this. People have already done it, and people are continuing to do it, and we don't know what the implications are. So even though it's the 90s from an internet technology standpoint, I think Jurassic Park way ahead of its time in terms of the importance of the subject matter of the movie. And I think it's just in that way it will continue to be timeless, because even though the tech looks dated and it feels dated to see people smoking in movies, especially movies with kids in them, it is really, the topic is, we have barely scratched the surface in terms of the impact that this technology and this sort of science will have on our lives. I promise you that.
It really is probably the ethics of, like, the don't bring your kids to an unfinished dinosaur park.
Yeah, that's a big one. I think maybe don't have the people who work for you also sign off in their professional opinion on the efficacy of your park, basically dangling money in front of them. That whole situation, highly unethical, for sure.
Very, very, very good on Doctors Grant and Sattler and Malcolm for being like, like, they show up, they, like, get, like, we're eating your Jello and your weird, like, bread salad, and we're not going to do it.
Yeah, I think that's called bread pudding, maybe? I don't know. No. No, panzanella, maybe?
Panzanella, yeah.
Yeah, something.
Whatever it was, Ellie Sattler was looking at it. She's like, I want to know what I'm eating.
Yeah, because we're here on a park where you are literally making animals from nothing.
It's like, what is
this? Soylent Green? What's happening?
It's like
here?
A facsimile of chicken.
Yeah. Has a smack of ham. but I mean, there's unethical things happening. How about when horrible things have happened to these poor children and they've been traumatized throughout the night, and then Alan Grant, the good doctor, has them climbing an electric fence. He grabs the fence and pretends to be electrocuted. These poor kids have been horrified. This is terrible. Maybe his instincts, Josh, that he's not a good dad or won't be a good dad, maybe those are good instincts, because he's traumatizing these poor kids. Although I guess Timmy says it's funny, but I don't know. That's bad dad energy for sure.
I don't know how Timmy will look back on it on the other side of the fence.
Right, considering what happens to Timmy.
You know, when, like, he thinks back on that memory.
Dr. Grant, you're a dick.
Might not be such a joke.
Yeah.
Dr. Grant is a bit of a dick. But, you know, he has some moments where he's being good to the kids and he's, you know, growing a heart. You know, I was just talking to Mike Bloom about Jurassic Park, and I think one of the interesting things that he was saying before he had to abruptly leave the podcast.
I'm sorry that was happening to you. That's
it's
terrible.
All right. It's totally okay. It's definitely not planned as a bit. That there is this sort of, like, mini arc for Dr. Grant, where it's sort of rare in this action film, in the action film space, to have, you know, essentially your hero is not only, like, coming to grips about the science behind the dinosaurs and how that is shifting and seeing a dinosaur and the childlike wonder for the first time, but is also, like, grumpy, not dad guy who hates kids, who leaves Jurassic Park, very lovingly protecting these two kids who he's grown extremely close to. That there is sort of, like, this really human arc at the heart of this movie, that maybe I don't really pay enough attention to when I consider Jurassic Park, which is a movie I go back to a lot.
Well, and it's not a movie I go back to a lot. It wasn't something that meant a lot to me when I was younger. Generally speaking, I'm not the action movie type. And the second half of the movie is, of course, very action oriented, some of which is incredible to see and some of which for me drags a little bit. But the first hour, and I think you really capture it when you talk about Dr. Grant looking at seeing dinosaurs for the first time with his childlike wonder, falling to the ground, basically. I mean, barely able to stand up at what he's seeing. Theories being confirmed, theories being thrown out the window, just worlds changing in a second. It's really terrible that he can't tap into that, having it been so close to the surface when Timmy is running around talking about books and being excited and about dinosaurs and all this, and Dr. Grant doesn't even want to ride in the car with him. Now, granted, by that point, I didn't realize I was doing it. By that point, he's had a little concerns, I think, considering what he has found out about Jurassic Park. So, of course, his head's not in the right place. And he does do some good stuff throughout the movie. You're right. But it is that first hour where all that's going on, that childlike wonder, that great moment, even though it doesn't make the most logical sense that they'd go all the way there not knowing exactly what was going to happen or having it kept a secret. They go there regardless. Like, it's all worth it for the reveal. It's such a memorable moment in all of cinematic history, truly, when that the way that scene plays out. So that first hour of the movie is really, really great for me.
So I know that this isn't a movie that you go back to often, wasn't like one that was important to you when you were younger. That being said, I've heard a rumor that you haven't, not only have you watched Jurassic Park recently.
You heard a rumor. Is this, are you Umbrella Academying me,
Josh?
Oh,
don't you dare. Don't you dare.
I mean, you're the one who's trying to use your powers over me. Continue.
There's no patron.
Strigoi?
There's no patron tier at which I watch the Umbrella Academy. It's not happening.
I hope people make you eat those words.
It's not happening. 10,000 patrons. That's what we'll do it at.
Well, I now have something I'm going to keenly track, and I may pay some Russian bots.
God. Hey, listen.
You'll take the money. For sale.
You know, we'll see.
You heard a rumor.
This is why I said the ethics. Sometimes they just go bad. The Jurassic Park, the three original Jurassic Park movies. I heard a rumor that you watched them all recently.
I did.
How'd that go for you?
Good. Not well. Not really good. Well, I just told you about, not really loving action movies. The action is really hot and heavy in the second and third movies. I will say the cast was very good in the second movie in particular. I really enjoyed the cast of that film, seeing people in different ways or just it was a pretty loaded cast. So I really did like that aspect of the movie. It just really went off the rails for me. And when it's a Godzilla movie at some point with San Diego, like it's too much. It's too much for me. But overall, it was fine. And I had seen it before, and I had never seen JP3 and things like that. And when I watched JP3, I thought, well, at least it's only like an hour and a half long. And as far as that goes, it wasn't terrible.
You like it more than Lost World?
I think so, just because it's shorter. Yeah. I really like the cast better in Lost World, but yeah, there's some excruciating stuff in Lost World when the trailer is over the edge of the cliff and there's a rope and poor Richard Schiff is running back and forth at the top of the hill and then the rope and then the dinosaurs. It's too much. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. And the beginning of it does have that ethical hook, if you will, when there's some discussions between Alan Grant and a bedridden Mr. Hammond there talking about what the second, basically vomiting exposition and getting us to the point where we can actually, how are we going to have another island with dinosaurs that we're going to? Here we are, and here's what's going on, and there's some corporate ethics involved and some analysis. I mean, that seems to be the thematic point of the movie, and ultimately ridiculously resolves itself with some dinosaurs in a boat. So it just felt like it failed to deliver, and it was too long. That's my review.
This shouldn't be a franchise.
Like a big timer, like it is now. I mean, they're still cranking them out, and there's cartoons.
I know, but it should have been a movie, and that's it.
Yeah, I think I'm with that. But it was also a franchise as books. Is that right? Did the Lost World, the book?
The Lost World book is a book that I have read and greatly enjoyed, and it is absolutely nothing like the Lost World movie. You know, the first movie is not a ton like the original Michael Crichton book. Different characters live, different characters die across the two books. I don't want to spoil who makes it and who doesn't. But there's some surprises in the adaptation process. I believe.
R.I.P. Timmy. Fingers crossed.
Are you not a Timmy guy?
I'm not a kids and movies guy.
This is becoming a theme on this podcast. Oh God. Yeah, I think, it's, you know, there maybe Ian Malcolm, I think, like kind of dies in the book, but then like in the second book, it starts off with Michael Crichton being like, the rumors of Dr. Malcolm's demise were greatly exaggerated, or something like that. I'm not remembering it exactly.
Yeah.
But I remember liking the second book quite a bit. It was just the two books, as far as I know.
And I was trying to figure out, was the second book written after the first film?
Interesting.
Or did it predate both in the way... 'cause some of that stuff obviously influences what's happening. And I don't know... When I was younger, it was
Lost World. Lost World comes out in 1995.
Okay.
So that is a solid 2 years after... after the first movie, and then
so a little bit of a cash grab, maybe.
Yeah, which obviously I can't throw stones at.
I wasn't setting you up for anything.
And then 2 years after Lost World book, the Lost World book comes out. The Lost World Jurassic Park the movie comes out in 1997.
Yeah. Well, listen, I love 90s films. I think the opportunities that are present here on post-show recaps and some of the things that are going to be discussed there are great. I think it was a really, other than maybe the 70s, I think probably my favorite decade of American films and just so many great films to watch and that I can go back to a ton. And as I said, the first hour of Jurassic Park is certainly that for me, like incredibly memorable stuff. And it's crazy to see adults smoking in movies. Like it is so odd to see some of this stuff that is clearly a relic of another age, but still recent enough that it can be remembered from our lifetime. So good stuff. Definitely a Jurassic Park fan in terms of I like the idea and the concepts. It's just the execution maybe that has sometimes left me wanting. There are active cartoons of this. Is that right?
Yeah. Netflix just released one. Talking to Rob earlier, he was saying that there's Lego Jurassic Parks.
LJPs. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what that's all about. I feel like Lego Jurassic Park is a pretty easy toy to sell. And the idea of like finding dinosaur bones and putting them together Lego style makes some sense to me.
Great idea.
I can see in my head Lego Dr. Grant.
Does he have a red bandana around his neck?
Yeah, of course.
Neck?
It's painted onto the figure, onto the torso.
Yeah, I love that.
Like I think that is one thing about the movies. Like everybody's very like action figurable. You know, I remember the action figures really well because I was a huge action figure nerd as a kid. And
you don't say.
Are you surprised?
I am.
I bought a lot of action figures in the past several months. Not sorry about it. They had like the Dino Damage action figures where like they would sell you dinosaurs that like you could take a chunk out of them, and it would show you like their rib cage and stuff like that, and it's called Dino Damage, and it was super cool.
Yeah.
I think I remember that. But like the Dr. Grant, Ellie Sattler, Ian Malcolm action figures, and even like the Muldoon action figure, like these toys in like one of these rare moments, like actually looked like the characters from the movie, because the characters in the movie wear such iconic clothing, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like you can close, like you would recognize somebody who is going out on Halloween as Dr. Alan Grant, hopefully not this year. You know, like you would notice someone who is dressed as Dr. Ellie Sattler. You would notice someone who is dressed up as Ian Malcolm.
Here's a question. Did the action figure for Dr. Ian Malcolm, did it shirt open?
I don't know.
Did it shirt open or like maybe a half zip?
I don't remember if it was like a comatose Malcolm or an awake Malcolm.
That's an inaction figure, the comatose one.
Yeah.
All right.
But I don't think there was a John Hammond action figure that I can recall. And then like they started getting into the other movies, and then the action figures were a lot more like stereotypical action figurey with like neon colored costumes and like if you drop them in hot water, their colors will change. Just really like kitschy 90s shit.
Did they ever have a video game of any sort that you played or you
went
to?
Yeah, for sure. So this is great. You will enjoy this.
That's why I asked.
So there was, I think it was for a system. I don't know if Jaguar and 3DO were different systems.
I believe they are. I think Philips made the 3DO and Atari made the Jaguar.
And I can't remember which one this was, but for one of those systems, there was a Lost World Jurassic Park game, I believe, okay. where like the storyline was about like finding Dr. Malcolm, and you get to the end. I don't remember how this was done because I never did it. This is all anecdotal from internet stuff, but I believe that you either beat the game and this is something you unlock, or you find it like buried somewhere in the game if you accomplish enough missions. But there is a video of Jeff Goldblum by a beach being like, "Oh wow, congratulations, you've beaten the game, you found me, that's so amazing, wow, look at you, look at what you've done, and now you're free, go live your life, get out of here, turn off the game, what are you doing sitting here looking for me?" And so it has like this ending that is literally just Jeff Goldblum, not even as Ian Malcolm.
Just a Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, I think so. It's, you can find the video online, and we'll post it in the show notes if this, you know, if anyone's listening to this and this is a podcast we actually end up publishing, you know, we'll put it there so that you can find it for yourself. But that is my memory of the Jurassic Park video game. But yeah, they really, you know, I don't know if they tried Jurassic Park comics or what, but they're certainly venturing into Jurassic Park animated TV, and they're keeping this thing alive with Jurassic World Dominion, the third Jurassic World movie, which is,
wait, Dominions? Does it like have the little yellow guys in it?
Yeah, or? they've got the Despicable Me's.
Yes, Dominions. Dominions. The thing is, Josh, we may be able to do one better than posting the video. It turns out in my storage, I have a working 3DO. And I just looked on eBay, and you can get the Jurassic Park interactive game for like $20. So maybe that's going to have to happen at some point if we stay sort of homebound. I may have to ship you a 3DO and a Jurassic Park game.
Oh, God. I remember the game being pretty bad.
I mean, 3DO is pretty cool. That's another story for another time.
I liked the 3DO. I thought the 3DO was cool.
Another story for another time.
The 3DO was cool.
It's not surprising they had sort of a live-action video in there because they played around with a lot of that kind of technology system. So. I know you say it shouldn't be a franchise. It clearly is a franchise. It's clearly a beloved one in many respects.
It's a classic movie and a bad franchise.
Yeah, and I mean, you could probably say that about a lot of franchises and a lot of classic movies. So sure. It's difficult. Yeah, no, come on. Really? There's only one good one?
There's two.
Okay. There's
two great ones, and then there's a
tweet. You have to find your salvation.
There's a tweet of mine that is in a high support of Terminator Salvation from 2009.
Somebody has brought that back in.
I don't think it's aged well, but it exists.
All right. Listen, Josh, the days of atonement have passed. All right. We're several days later.
No, I'm beyond atonement at this point, Antonio.
Cool. Okay. All right.
That's how I feel. That's how I feel. Yeah. I think classic movie, bad franchise.
Classic movie, bad franchise. Probably not a hot take, but I do think there are some Jurassic World fans out there. Maybe not Jurassic World 2, but I think Jurassic World
made, you know, for a time, it was the top grossing movie or like top three grossing movie of all time, something like that. I don't think it cracked Avatar or Titanic. I think it was right behind them. And then...
Can you hold on for a second?
Yeah. You okay?
Well...
You all right? What's up?
I'm all right. This is embarrassing. For acoustic reasons, I sometimes record in an undisclosed location where I currently am.
Okay. Are you in the bathroom?
Acoustic reasons.
Okay. All right. Okay. Look, I think he's in the bathroom. Antonio, please, come on, man. This is like the third time in a row that someone's...
No. I'm sorry. I already told you I felt bad about that, but...
All right. Come on.
There's some kind of noise.
Oh.
There's no reason for there to be a noise. I have the door closed.
Is there something shaking on... I'm hearing like a shaking on your side of the microphone?
I don't... I don't really know. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Ah! Oh my god! Oh my god! No! Antonio! Antonio, no! Oh no!
Josh, what are you? What's wrong? What are you doing?
Josh.
Wake up.
Antonio.
Josh.
Antonio Mazzaro.
Josh.
What are you doing?
Up. It's a Kevin Mahadeo.
Yeah. What are you?
We're trying to start.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah, why are you screaming about Antonio for? We're supposed to be here, going to start recording Lovecraft. Why are you screaming about someone who's not even on this podcast?
Oh, my God.
Never been on this podcast. Yeah, you were asleep and you were screaming.
Something about Antonio being eaten?
Yeah, so, all right, so we're here because we're about to record an episode of our Lovecraft Country podcast, which we host every single week here on Post Show Recaps, and it's one of the many free shows that you get. Just by virtue of having Post Show Recaps in existence, but you could support the show if you really wanted to with your dollars by going to postshowrecaps.com/patron or postshowrecaps.com/patreon or patreon.com/postshowrecaps. We were here today to record Lovecraft Country, and I just like spontaneously fell asleep on you guys.
Yeah, I'm worried about you. That's happened, I feel like, several times now. And you have these apparently horrific nightmares, which I guess makes sense. I mean, we are doing a semi-horror podcast, so.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It was a very succinct way of putting it, too.
Yeah, so
what were you dreaming about?
All right, this is embarrassing. So I watched Jurassic Park recently, and I had this idea, and it's an idea that I've kind of had in my head for a little while, is to do like Jurassic Park the podcast. And so in my dream, I started doing Jurassic Park the podcast with Rob Cesternino, and then Rob had to go away, and then I started talking about doing Jurassic Park the podcast. I started podcasting about it with Mike Bloom, and then Mike and I were talking about maybe doing like a Survivor simulation, Survivor Jurassic Park, and then I had to go away too. And then I like felt really guilty that like the podcast wasn't working out. It was very inadequate. I wasn't getting it right, and like it felt like it was just like a giant excuse to pump up the Patreon that we're launching. That's launched, frankly, that you can go and check out right now. And I started like worrying about that, and then Antonio Mazzaro showed up, and it was just like old times. It was me and Antonio, and we were just talking, and it was like glorious, great Antonio stuff. And then I watched as my podcasting BFF AEAEAE got eaten alive by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And then I guess I woke up.
You know, Josh, I love dreams. I do a lot of dream analyses. And I would say that a lot of these dreams seem to stem from your own personal inadequacies about yourself and your concern about that. But if you just saw Jurassic Park, that's way more of the easy, obvious explanation. You saw Jurassic Park. That movie's horrifying. So
it's a scary
clearly.
Movie.
All right. Well, you two are the horror experts, right? Like you both know horror inside and out. Does Jurassic Park classify as a horror movie?
I mean, I think it does to an extent, right? Like, probably when you saw it, and I saw it when I was really young. Jurassic Park was actually the first movie I saw in theaters ever.
Really?
Yes, it is. It is my theater movie, and
you were what? You were like 7 years old?
What was this? Yeah, probably a little bit older. Maybe like eight. Yeah, 94 was it?
93.
Oh, yeah, then I was 7. I was pretty young, but at that point, I'd been watching horror for at least 3 years. So definitely, I mean, you know, Latanya, you could probably speak to this too. This movie starts off with, you know, this shipment coming in and this guy getting pulled inside of a cage while you just hear the screeching sounds and, you know, Muldoon is just shouting like, shoot her! Like, that is a horror movie start right there. That is the first, you know, the pre-credit moment of like horrificness that this movie kind of prepares you for.
Right. And I mean, we learn very early in life from The Exorcist that you can't have an archaeological dig in a movie and have it not be terrifying, right?
Yeah.
No one spews green pea soup in this movie, but there is green jello.
There is green jello, which is a great scene. I mean, if we're talking about horrific moments from Jurassic Park, I feel like there's a lot, but that one starts like a sequence, right? Like that jello shaking in the hand, and then the kids are like running and they're inside the kitchen and hiding. It's just such a great moment, and the tension in that movie, I think even to today, it holds up so well. It's such a well-done, well-paced movie to like purposely scare you while still having these really cool action beats and really cool comedy moments and just Laura Dern being the greatest gift known to man.
Yeah, Laura effing Dern is in this movie. I mean, Nora Franshaw, Renata Klein, the woman who saw Baby Yoda at a basketball game, is in this movie. And the close-up on her face when she's looking up, you know, from her guidebook to see a dinosaur for the first time is really one of the great shots in a movie. And it has nothing to do with the CGI. It's the classic horror Hitchcock blonde, you know, registering a look of shock or panic, or maybe it's a combination of both on their face before anyone else in the audience actually sees the reveal, which is very horror, very Hitchcock.
I was and you talking also- to Antonio about this in my dream. Is that like so much of the horror and like the quality of this movie really just like stems from the character stuff even more so than the dinosaurs themselves often.
Oh yeah. And like the character beats in this movie is really great. Like it's definitely has horrific moments, but I think this movie excels so well at themes, like obviously man versus monster, but like man's own hubris. There's actually a character arc for Dr. Grant in this about not liking children, not being ready for kids. And then at the end of the movie, of course, coming around to that notion. There's so many great themes in this, but the horror element of like man playing God and the repercussions that we get from that, you know, like Pirates of the Caribbean breaking down and eating the tourists, feels very relevant to a lot of our experiences. The idea of theme parks, it's all there tapping into, I think, parts of our own subconscious and these like smaller horrific things that we don't really think about, and really that movie capitalizes on.
Yeah.
Colonialism. Horrifying.
Yeah. Truly. Well, actually a former colleague of Kevin's, and I think I've never worked with him directly at Wizard when Kevin and I worked at Wizard magazine, Sean T. Collins wrote an article not terribly long ago about how the true monster at the heart of Jurassic Park is capitalism. And it was like the scariest thing I'd ever read because it's so true.
Oh, it's very true.
Yeah. That's all that lawyer is there for. Yeah. Right? To be the capitalist.
I love Antonio, but he's a lawyer. Was that why I saw him get eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex in my dream?
No. Oh yeah. I mean, if we want to talk about
lawyer.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, the kids scene is probably super horrifying, arguably can be the most horrific. But for me, I think the moment the movie really takes this turn and becomes what it is the sequence that starts that, right? Like you have the kids and everyone in the cars break down, they stop in front of the T-Rex pen, you hear the goat going at it. And up to this point, you haven't seen the T-Rex. And this is like the monster reveal. This is the Godzilla moment where the goat stops and there's the question of just like, what happened to the goat? And then boom, goat like hits the windshield, pans up in a great shot, and you just see the T-Rex for the first time lift its head, eat this goat. You see its face, you see it grab and start touching the electrical fence, and it's off. Like the tension building, that moment, that is quintessential monster horror done so perfectly well by a master, you know, director, Steven Spielberg, at probably top of his game, quite arguably here. And that entire sequence kicks off such amazingness. The kids are freaking out, the T-Rex bursting through the top of the car, the glass, and the only thing holding them is like holding it back. The car starts sinking into the mud. Alan Grant comes out trying to save the day, and Ian Malcolm starts running and runs and throws the flare. Just
not supposed to do that.
No.
Yeah.
And then the lawyer gets eaten, and it's just like this moment that also is like cut with the perfect amount of humor, because you don't like that lawyer. So when it happens, you're both horrified and kind of like, oh yeah, that's
at
that
least
one.
It's just
that
the blood sucking lawyer.
Right, exactly.
You left those children in the car.
when you gotta go.
I was 12 when this movie came out, and my grandmother took me and my sister to go see it, actually at Evergreen Plaza's movie theater, which doesn't exist anymore. It was one of the few movie theaters on the south side of Chicago that was a big part of my childhood growing up. And whenever Granny took us to the movie theater, we knew that we needed to just prepare the people around us for a snoring woman, because mm-hmm. she didn't care about any of the things that we were going to see. But she woke up during the T-Rex scene because those children were left in the car, but mostly I think because of Jeff Goldblum running in the rain, honestly. Yeah. But yeah, I remember like the buildup to the introduction of the kids was always really horrifying to me. And being pretty sheltered as a kid, just the idea that we would ever be left in a car ever was not something that happened until I was a lot older. And it was just something like someone was running into the store. So when that lawyer left those kids in the car, knowing what he saw, I was just like No, yeah. that was terrifying to me as a kid, and it woke my grandmother up during a movie, which never ever happened.
Yeah, I think the more I'm thinking about it, like I'm thinking about all of the action set pieces in Jurassic Park, and they feel like horror beats. There's like the serial killer of the velociraptors stalking Muldoon in the Raptor.
What a great moment.
There's Laura Dern outracing the lingering raptor that's in like the power station. And that moment of relief when Samuel Jackson's arm drops is more of a horror beat than anything. Like that could be in Scream, like that could be like Sidney Prescott in the house at the end of the movie. There's just like when I think about a lot of the scenes from this movie, I feel like maybe this is a horror movie, Jurassic Park.
Yeah, and it pulls from a lot of stuff, right? Like we mentioned the Godzilla aspect, and you're right, the velociraptors are very much like this stalker killer that you get. I mean, Clever Girl is one of the most, I think, famous lines in movie history, and it's funny, my fiance Robin had never seen Jurassic Park fully, right? Like she had seen bits and pieces and she knew of Clever Girl but never knew the context. And I remember when we watched it, finally, we sat down and watched a couple years ago, and we got to the Clever Girl moment. She was kind of horrified. I was like, that is what that moment means? And I was like, yeah, it's effed up. It's intense, and it's just really well executed, too. Like, introducing, it's like Jaws, right? Like, when they introduce the shark killer, it's like, this is the guy Muldoon we've been building up, and then he gets, like, massacred by getting outsmarted by the velociraptor. Yeah. And you have at the end, it becomes like almost alien-esque, right? Like you have this stalking element turning into like the action beat as they're all trying to survive being in a cramped situation inside the visitor center. There's all these elements that play really well together. Like Jurassic Park is very much, I think, a horror movie masked as like this adventure story at the same time. And just it does so much so well. I Jurassic Park to me is, I think, top 10 films of all time, in my opinion. And I watched it at the right time.
Top 10 of all time.
Wow. It holds up so well, and it's so well paced, and the story is so good. The acting is phenomenal. There's so many quotables from it. I think that story has, considering it came out in 1994, especially 93, and it's still, I think, you can watch it today and feel its presence, its beats, its horror moments, and the pacing of it, the story, the characters, like the real arc, even for Alan Grant, I think is so strong. That moment Laura Dern looks up and sees him and says, run, and she's like running to him. It's all so powerful and so well done. It's nuts because like so many people think about Jurassic Park now and they think Jurassic World, and that is not a horror movie. The horror in that movie, it's production and its execution. Yeah.
That it happened at all. LaTanya, is Jurassic Park a top 10 movie of all time?
I feel like I'm about to commit movie fan sacrilege right now. it's not. So, when I left the theater as a kid, I did not leave the biggest fan of this movie, honestly. And I wasn't alone from the theater that I left. It was difficult at the time to tell why that was the case, because I really did enjoy the movie, but I wasn't like, it wasn't like rocketed to the top of all-time movies for me. And I think that it was probably one of the first times in my movie-going experience as a young kid that kind of the bells and whistles of a big-budget movie couldn't wow me out of not really seeing someone that I could identify with on the screen. Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie because, of course, Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie. But that's it. And at the time, we don't even get to, we don't get to know why we don't see John Arnold's death scene in this movie. We don't know that there's a hurricane that destroyed all the sets until like 2018. So we just, get introduced this one character and we don't even get to see the payoff of, the death. And while it does build tension and is very cinematic for the movie overall, that was the character that we had. And it was it's very much in fitting with horror movie tropes that we've discussed before about the black character getting killed off. When we left, we were talking about the CGI. We were talking about the effects that were obviously like ahead of their time. But we were also kind of thinking about the story because after that like really big moment with the T-Rex, my grandmother went back to sleep. You know, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, the movie does definitely still hold up. I saw that it was on Netflix and rewatched it for, you know, getting ready for this. And the performances are great. Like the kid actors are really good in this movie. They're not annoying at all, which can happen in some of like the bigger budget movies, but these kids are great. And all of the performances are wonderful. But like coming out of it as a kid myself, I would not have ranked it in the top 10. And that's the opposite of every other person who saw this movie as a kid that I know.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know anyone in my life who didn't walk away from it being like Jurassic Park obsessed. But I was 7 or 8 when it came out. And like this was like, I don't know, this was tailor made for a kid of that age, I think. Like there's like sort of like there's danger in it, and there's definitely wow factor, and there's nuance to it. But I think that it is a movie that, at least for me when I was that young, I was able to like watch it and be like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna be wanting to be.
I wish I saw it when I was younger. You all were younger when it came out.
Baby boy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was the age thing as well. I mean, and there's obviously like a semi difference, I think, in terms of experience like that. Like I did never had a similar experience for movies. Like I mean, I kind of mentioned this before in the podcast that like, in a way, like growing up, I was essentially forced to just identify with no one who looked like me, because there's literally no one who looks like me in any big budget film until, I don't know, 5 years ago. The first person I ever saw in a movie that looked like me was Fisher Stevens in Short Circuit, who was brown facing. And I didn't know that at the time. I was excited. And if that movie still holds a special place in my heart, I still love that movie, despite the fact that it is a white man in brown face. I mean, Apu Nipasapina Petalon was the cartoon character I could identify with, which is a white guy doing my, as I think Hari Kondabolu said, an impression of a white person doing an impression of my uncle, which, you know, is their own thing. So for me, I definitely get where you're coming from, but like the experience was different, I guess, because I didn't see those things. And like now, of course, I look at movies with a definite critical eye, and I definitely call out any aspects of that, right? Like I'm so adamant too about seeing a black character in a horror film and just being like, why you have to do that? And I think, you know, that comes with being older. That for me specifically, you know, as they say, like at a certain point I got woke, and once you're woke, you don't go back to sleep. And so I guess that experience becomes different, you know? So like it hit differently because of the age maybe and things like that. And, for me, that movie still ranks so high and is so powerful and just did things that I hadn't seen at the time, especially as my first theater going experience ever.
Yeah. That's why I preface it the way I did, because I know that that movie is so near and dear to so many people, and it's not a perspective that I'm coming to as a 2020 thing. This is honestly how I felt when I left the theater. Yeah. Like, I remember I talked to my sister about this actually, when we were getting like in preparation to have this discussion. And I was just like, oh, like I really like so much about this movie and rewatching it. And she was like, are you going to be honest? And I was like, I think I have to be, like, if I'm being true to myself. I remember us walking out of the theater being disappointed, and it's just so the opposite of everyone else's experience. And the thing is, there is still something that's so captivating, and we have to go back about this, which is why
now you're speaking my language. That,
yeah. You know, I've still seen every other Jurassic Park world, you know, extravaganza associated movie that's happened after it. You know, I've still watched all of them, because there's something almost indelible about that experience, even if it's not your ideal experience when you're a child.
Yeah, an experience is obviously like not a universal thing, right? Everyone exactly. has an experience, and everyone has their own perspective on things, which is why it's important to like discuss this stuff and bring it about. I mean, for a lot of people, you know, probably listening here, never thought about Jurassic Park as a horror movie or the horror elements involved. They saw it as a Steven Spielberg film,
right.
Which to an extent it was, but I think it was purposely done to include all these different aspects and be executed in a way that I think holds up. Like, I think the CG still has, like, the CG doesn't hold up, but there wasn't a lot of CG. And that's one thing going back and looking at it, I really did appreciate, right? Like, you look at stuff now and you look at the first Jurassic World, it feels dated, even though it was only a few years ago. you see the actual animatronics in Jurassic Park, and I feel like they're still so strong. They hold up well. I feel the same way about Aliens and Terminator 2. There's these... Mm-hmm. The using, I think, practical effects really makes a movie last longer and doesn't become almost like dated and filtered out so quickly.
For sure. And you really see everything that he learned on Jaws with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, no wonder it's a horror movie. Dude made Jaws.
Yeah.
I mean, the realism of these dinosaurs are really, really great. I mean, it's almost as real as the one behind Josh right now that's about to chomp down on him.
Excuse me?
Yeah, Josh, there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex behind you. It's about to eat you.
Oh my god, no! Oh god! Tyrannosaurus!
Josh!
It ate me! It
ate me! Josh Wiggler! Josh Wiggler!
Calm down, buddy.
Yeah.
It's okay. We're here. We're all, you're here. We're here together. You've got to stop screaming.
Jess Calise, Brooklyn Zed, my Mole Patrol co-host. And Jess is my co-host on the Walking Dead podcast here on Poster Recaps. And Brooklyn Zed, who's promised to appear on the Walking Dead Poster Recaps podcast.
I sure did.
Well, Zed, he remembers all of that stuff, so I guess that might be good.
That's a good sign.
Oh my god, I just had the craziest dream.
Wait, let me guess. You were eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah,
that's buddy. So weird. I had the same dream.
It was not a dream.
Sorry.
You notice it's kind of dark in here.
Yeah, you know, coming to think of it, I can only really hear you. I can't see either of you very well.
Yeah, we got eaten by the Tyrannosaurus Rex. We are dead.
Wait, you got eaten by the Tyrannosaurus Rex too?
Smart team, socialist team, stupid team, all eaten by the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
All teams taste alike.
So we're inside. We're in like dinosaur hell right now.
We are in dinosaur hell.
That's tough. I guess
they've got decent
acoustics in here, at least. It's pretty good.
Josh, it's 2020.
Yeah.
If we were ever going to wind up in dinosaur hell, this was going to be the year it was going to happen.
It was going to be around now. That stinks. We just launched the Patreon on Post Show Recaps, too. It's postshowrecaps.com/patron or postshowrecaps.com/patreon or patreon.com/postshowrecaps, however you choose to get it. And like, we've done all that, and we've got such exciting, ambitious plans for the podcast network, and we're going to be stuck in dino hell and we're not even going to be able to do any of it?
Well, there might be a way.
People could join us. They could come join us in dinosaur hell.
Well, there's option A.
Life can find a way.
Life finds a way. P.S. aside, my 13-year-old self had so many things awakened in her by Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, how do you both feel about Jurassic Park before we talk about anything else? I mean, seems like we got nothing but time here in Dino Hell.
Dino Hell is where I start telling you about all my adolescent crushes. But
okay,
yes, that was.
I enjoyed Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah,
I do too. Probably in a different way.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, it's a formative movie. It was obviously very influential. I think Zed might have been a toddler when it came out.
I was but a young thing. It was 93, right?
It was 93.
Mm-hmm. I was 3 years old.
Okay.
I did not watch this movie as a child.
Yeah.
It's probably for the best.
Probably. I think three is probably a little young.
Timmy was at least a little older than three.
Yeah. Sweet Timmy. How do you feel about Timmy?
He's not the worst child actor ever.
He just loves dinosaurs.
I loved dinosaurs too until I watched one eat my friend in a nightmare, and then apparently one ate me and you guys in real life. Jess, there's a way out of here, you said.
That's an
important thing to discuss.
I mean, you loved dinosaurs as a child.
Yeah.
Right. So I am given to understand that we have a dinosaur quiz that the two of you can take. And as the stupid team and the socialist team, you are going to be given this test, and I can proctor the test as the smart team. I am not allowed to help you.
Because we've done so well with quizzes in the past.
Over on the Mole Patrol podcast, which people who only listen to post-show recap should check out the full season one of Mole Patrol, assuming anyone can hear us from inside the depths of dinosaur hell.
I think the acoustics are really great.
The sound is good. I think the sound is good.
It's going to have a far reach.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, Mole Patrol is one of those great perennial podcasts. You can just pick it up on Reality Rehap Ups, and it doesn't cost you anything but time, because you can hop onto YouTube and watch the episodes and listen along with us as you go through the episodes. And it is a lot of fun. It is some of the most fun I've ever had podcasting. And so I guess if I was going to be in dinosaur hell with anybody, I would want
this would be the
crew. I would want it to be the crew.
It's
yes.
It's a good crew to be in. What did you call this, Zed? I thought I heard you say the land after time.
The land after time.
Yeah, that's where we are right now.
Yeah.
How do we get out? We have a quiz.
We have a quiz.
You're in a rush to get back to 2020, Josh?
I mean, not really, but I am in a rush to get back to my cats and pizza.
Okay. And that's fair. There are no cats here, and no pizza in dinosaur house.
See Emily.
Yeah. I'd be happy to get out of here. I have a child.
Yeah.
So I have a 4-question quiz, and I think for the two of you, this should be pretty familiar territory. It takes the form of our usual reality TV quiz, whereby we have 4 pieces of information, and one of them is something that was made up by someone who apparently thinks a lot like I do, because these are very on brand questions.
Okay. All right. Well,
let's say.
All right. So let's just put our Timmy hats on. We'll do our very best, Tim and Lex.
Great.
You can be Timmy or Lex, whether you fancy yourself a dinosaur expert or a computer hacker. And I'll be the other one, Zed.
Great. I'll be Tyrannosaurus Lex. Sitting right there.
Yeah, it is. Low-hanging name.
It's what we specialize in here, I think.
All right. Well, let's fight our way out of here. Let's fight
our
way
out of the. Try and get out. Gotta get out of here.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, like, you probably will not be helped by any amount of dinosaur studying you did on Earth, just in case you got devoured by T-Rex.
Okay.
Because there's some really weird stuff in here.
Okay.
I specialize in weirdness. So without further ado, let's go to question number 1, which deals with dinosaur hoaxes.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, okay. Dinosaur and dinosaur adjacent hoaxes.
Okay.
Because
dragons are obviously included.
Right. Dragons, Paleolithic stuff, like pretty much dead stuff in the ground.
Okay, great.
Our wheelhouse here.
Not unsimilar to us if the Tyrannosaurus are subterranean.
Pretty much. We're going to be dead things in the ground pretty soon here. Yeah. So okay. Let's start off. The first dinosaur hoax that I'm going to present to you of the 4 deals with Achinosaurus. In 1888, Belgian scientist Gerard Smets announced that he had discovered fossilized jawbone fragments from a new species of hadrosaur. He was later proven wrong by an independent commission and compelled to withdraw from science entirely after the fragment was proven to be a piece of petrified wood.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
So, you must leave science. You've been banished from science.
That feels harsh.
To do some of that these days.
Yeah. You know, back in the day, if you were making stuff up egregiously, you weren't allowed to just dig yourself a bigger hole.
There were consequences. Interesting.
Yeah. So, number 2, we're going to talk about Piltdown Man. In 1912, shortly after similar evidence of early humans was discovered in France and Belgium, a skull was discovered in a gravel pit in England. 30 years later, new dating techniques were able to prove that the skull was actually assembled out of skull pieces from a modern human and a modern orangutan.
Huh.
Yikes.
So someone like buried like Hannibal Lecter style, like that's some serial killer shit.
Well, I don't know where they got the skull.
That's a good question, but there's probably not a good answer.
At best, we're talking about like prehistoric serial killer. Like that is some ritualistic messed up stuff.
Like just take a couple of skulls, take them apart, put them back together wrong, and got yourself the missing link.
That's like if Timmy was stuck alone as the lone survivor on Jurassic Park. By the end of the whole thing, like 40 years later, like that's how crazy he'd be.
He'd be living in a shack made of bones.
Yeah, the bones. Bone emperor. Okay. Dino bone emperor Timmy.
So our third dinosaur hoax story, Dolichosaurus integris. In 1956, the American Museum of Natural History debuted a skeleton of a new dinosaur species that appeared to have both a long neck and an armored body. It came to light eventually that a museum worker had signed for the skeleton, not realizing the extent of its incomplete state, and when he realized they were missing pieces, he supplemented it with plaster vertebrae left over from a previous reconstruction of a different dinosaur in order to avoid getting in trouble.
Huh.
I think they do that.
Yeah, that sounds like science.
That's how science works, obviously.
I think science works that way.
Okay.
All right. Finally, I'm going to tell you about Archaeoraptor. The November 1999 issue of National Geographic featured a story on a fossil that had been reconstructed in China and which allegedly served as the missing link between birds and terrestrial carnivorous dinosaurs. The magazine issued a correction a year later after it was proven that the fossil had been assembled from two different unrelated fossils, possibly to increase its value on the black market.
Everybody loves putting these different things together. So one of these is not.
One of these is something that one of these is made up. Three of these are true, and one of these is made up.
Okay. So normally on Mole Patrol, when we do these quizzes, Ed, we're often looking for like two things are alike. So which one of those is the one that's fake?
And right. So
this is one we have like animal hybridization. Happening twice
across the board. I feel
mirrors
like.
For days.
Uh huh. Which one do we think it's one of those, or do you feel like there's another fake?
So we had the human and orangutan skull.
Mm-hmm.
We had the dinosaur skeleton, maybe that was finished with
other fake, dinosaur parts.
With fake dinosaur parts from another reconstruction.
That feels so real.
Which again, yeah, I just think that's how you make a dinosaur, because they never have a complete skeleton. You gotta put in pieces.
I think for the sake of, I mean, I guess we don't really have to worry about it if we lose because we're stuck in dino hell, but for the sake of everyone who isn't stuck in dino hell, I hope that the orangutan serial killer isn't real.
What was the first one?
It was the hadrosaur jawbone fragment that turned out to be a piece of petrified wood.
Sure. Classic.
Yeah, I think petrified wood, that feels like a mistake that I'd make, at least.
But a scientist who then gets banished from science?
Yeah, that would be, maybe if you're a scientist, like that would be a bannable offense. Like, you should know better. That's what, dude. That's definitely not a bone. That was from a tree.
You should know the difference. You're a scientist.
You idiot. All right, that or the serial killer?
I think it's one of those two also.
Which one would you like to do? We could rock, paper, scissors our way out of it.
Oh, God. Which one are you leaning towards?
Serial killer skull.
Okay, then let's go serial killer skull.
I don't want it to be real.
I'm sure it is.
Well, here's how you know that you're not dreaming right now, Josh. Because we're really real here in dinosaur hell. And you know it's real because you looked at my fake story and you said, that one just feels so real. Which you have done approximately 6,000 times over the course of Mole Patrol. You are incorrect.
It was the third one?
It was the third one. The Museum of Natural History employee.
The one with how science
works? Yeah, the one that put extra dinosaur pieces on an incomplete skeleton. I made that up.
Well, I got to say that, you know, if anybody out there is somehow able to hear us, that this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone who's listened to me on Post Show Recaps for close to 7 years now, that I'm a dum-dum. I would like to think that that's part of the charm at this point. I'd like to think that that's a little bit of a piece of the draw. That stinks. So
yeah. Well, I've got three things that I want to tell you about in this question before we move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got all the time in the world because we're existing out of time right now in the afterlife. The first thing is the story about the piece of petrified wood. Legit was my favorite dinosaur trivia when I was a child, because I had the encyclopedia that listed every dinosaur that had ever been found. And this is just like a random entry among all the other entries. And I thought it was the most hilarious thing that I had ever read. So that's what I was like as a child.
Super cool.
Super cool. Everyone
we were
wanted
all
to be my
very
friend.
Cool children.
Yeah. Yes.
And now we're here.
Now we're here in dinosaur hell, podcasting about dinosaur trivia.
Definitely in dinosaur hell.
Definitely. Yes. Anybody that out there that plays Learned League is going to know about Piltdown Man, because that was actually a question in the past season of Learned League. And then finally, the name that I gave the fake story, Dolosaurus integris, is Latin for complete hoax. Complete hoax lizard.
Oh, look at you, Damon Lindelofing me.
Yeah. I learned from the best.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, let's move on. Let's see if you can do better with this. The good news is actual paleontology trivia is pretty much entirely out the window at this point.
Okay, good.
Oh, good.
Because we're going to move on. Question number two deals with Jurassic Park behind the scenes.
Ooh, yeah. All right.
Well, I love
Jurassic Park. I mean, if it was a dream or not. It was Jurassic Park, the podcast. I feel like ultimately it was a good idea.
I think so. I think your real self would have really approved.
Yeah.
Back in the world of the living.
Definitely seems like something my real self would have done, at least.
Indeed.
Whether or not it's a good idea.
Yeah. All right. So Jurassic Park behind the scenes. Story number one. Although Steven Spielberg had real paleontologists on set throughout filming, he occasionally didn't listen to them. Notably, he decided that his velociraptors would be far bigger than any other raptors that had been discovered to date. Then, during production, paleontologists in Utah discovered the Utah raptor, which turned out to be pretty much exactly the dinosaur he was envisioning.
Ooh, okay.
Cool.
See, that piece I don't think that I knew, but I do think that I was enough of a Jurassic Park nerd, so any dinosaur knowledge I have is like really centered on the time period of Jurassic Park.
Great.
And I do feel like the raptors were bigger in the movie than they were supposed to be in reality.
All right. Well, that should give you an edge here. Yeah. So, number two, the iconic water glass shaking scene was inspired by Spielberg listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire in his car with the bass cranked up.
Very believable. Dancing in September.
Indeed.
Very believable. Yeah. Therefore, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Therefore, that's the wrong one.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, the shaving cream can that Dennis Nedry used to smuggle dino embryos was originally a can of Kraft Easy Cheese, but it was changed to Barbasol when prop supervisors pointed out that the can would have been too narrow to carry more than two or three embryo canisters, and it wouldn't have been worth the risk.
Okay.
Of course.
It'll be pretty cheesy if that's the fake.
It's not easy being cheesy, Josh.
So I've heard.
And finally, the dinosaur skeleton depicted on the movie poster and original novel cover is actually from the Cretaceous period.
I think that's correct. I think that's real. I'm pretty sure that's real. Then it would be the cheesy one, Zed, or do we really believe Spielberg listens to Earth, Wind, and Fire?
My instinct is the cheese one. Yeah. I believe Spielberg listens to Earth, Wind, and Fire. That seems generationally appropriate.
All right, he's an old.
Let's spray that easy cheese can. Let's go down Easy Cheese Street.
Oh, God.
Well, the cheese has not steered you wrong yet. You are correct.
Yes, we got one.
We got one.
We got one. Okay.
Okay, all right. Okay, quick okay. Gas.
You're doing really well. Okay. This is good. All right.
All right.
Moving on. We're going to move into a different dinosaur franchise now. We're going to talk about The Land Before Time.
Wow. Okay. So I don't know if we've cleared the rights to talk about The Land Before Time. Sorry, I'm breaking the fourth wall. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. Well, it's dinosaur hell, so you can't have
our reality, our current predicament.
You can't have dinosaur hell without The Land Before Time, Josh. No, that's true. Just not how it works.
It's true.
Especially when you consider that there have been 14 Land Before Time movies.
What?
That's
14.
That's an actively upsetting fact.
I told you, dinosaur hell.
You know, it really does feel like dying. Like, now I know I'm dead because there's 14 lands before time.
Plus a TV series.
The living don't have that. The living do not have that many land before time movies.
No way.
It's not possible.
I don't know.
And so can we say the whole category is fake?
No.
We object.
Yeah, we object.
I'm not going to break down all 14 movies. There's not going to be 14 and then a 15th one that's fake.
Cancel all of it except for Petrie.
Oh, Petrie. Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about Petrie in just a second here.
No, I like Sarah the Triceratops, too.
So we got four Land Before Time movies I'm going to describe to you, and you can tell me which one of these is a fake Land Before Time movie. And I'm guessing the two of you probably have more familiarity with this franchise than I do, because I think maybe I was slightly too old for the first one, saw it anyway, and never saw another one.
I think I've only seen the first one. Anyway, all right, let's hear it.
All right. Well, the first one's not in here. So, all right. First up, we have The Stone of Cold Fire. When a large blue meteor crashes into a distant volcano, Littlefoot and his friends decide the meteor is magical and embark on a quest to reach it before it falls into the hands of Petrie's evil uncle, Terrano.
Yeah. Cancel Terrano.
For real, dude.
Yeah, that dude is bad news.
So we also have Invasion of Tiny Sauruses.
Oh.
After Littlefoot accidentally knocks down the community's supply of tree sweets, which they had been saving for Nibbling Day, he finds a herd of very small longnecks living in a cavern beneath the Great Valley.
Can you repeat that whole thing?
Invasion of Tiny Sauruses. Mm-hmm. After Littlefoot accidentally knocks down the community's supply of tree sweets, which they had been saving for Nibbling Day, he finds a herd of very small longnecks living in a cavern beneath the Great Valley.
Jess, if you made that up, you're comedy genius. Tree sweets?
Tree sweets for Nibbling Day.
Don't you guys celebrate Nibbling Day? Are you not observing?
Not yet. If we get out of here.
We're about to.
If we get out of here.
I think the T-Rex celebrated Nibbling Day.
Yeah.
That's
how we got here in the first place.
Yep.
All right. We have Race to the Triceratop.
Of course we do.
Of course we do. Sarah the Triceratops stumbles upon a secret grove of plants that have magical healing properties, but only grow in volcanic soil. When her little sister Trisha falls ill just as the volcano starts to rumble, Sarah and friends embark on a race against time to retrieve the green healers.
Okay.
And finally.
Sounds like something Sarah would do.
Yep. Oh, wait, that's Ducky.
That's Ducky, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. Ducky has a very tragic story. So
I don't want to think about Ducky right now.
Yeah, I don't either. Nope.
It's okay. Already depressing.
Nope.
Yeah.
Finally, the great day of the flyers. Petrie the Pteranodon struggles with preparing for a flying competition. With help from a newcomer to the Great Valley, a feathered dinosaur named Guido, Petrie learns that his inability to fly in formation is a strength, not a weakness.
Oh.
That sounds lovely. I want to believe in the artistry of Jess Lee's coming up with Tree Sweets and Nibbling Day.
I want to believe in that too, but we laughed so hard at the pun of the third one. I recall a time in the land before time, mm-hmm. when we were alive and taking this quiz, and we loved Noah's LARP. And so we thought it was real, and it was too good to be true.
And so you think Take It to the Triceratops.
Is that what it was called?
Race to the Triceratops.
That's my instinct.
All right, I'm following Zed either deeper into the pits of time or hell or out of here.
Pressure.
Well, everything is not all bad in hell, because you are absolutely correct.
Hey!
Oh, man, one more and we're out of here.
That's
now,
right.
The bad news, though, is... if it's a tie, it counts as a loss.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
That's what I've been told by the testing commission.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to nominate Invasion of Tiny Sauruses for one of our movie casts.
Yeah, I like that. I think that could be good.
The tree sweets are like little blossoms on the tree, and he crashes into the tree and all the blossoms fall off, and then the tiny sauruses eat them.
Sounds like something a tiny saurus would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just in their nature.
I hope we don't meet any ghost Tinosauruses here in Dinosaur Hill.
Yep, Tinosauruses.
Fine. Have you been hoarding tree sweets, Josh?
You know I have.
Seems about right.
All right. Well, your final category in this dystopian nightmare hellscape that is the dinosaur hell / belly of the T-Rex. We are going to talk about episodes of the seminal early 90s television series Dinosaurs.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Not the mama.
Not right, the mama.
In my dream, we were talking about Earl Sinclair, Mike and I. Anyway, continue.
Well, that's good. That's good. Maybe that'll help you here.
Yes.
Like, try to call back to your dream self. You need to be hypnotized.
Okay.
Here we go. Dinosaurs episodes. We talk about cooking up a storm. In an effort to cook better food for her newly herbivorous children, Fran joins a cooking club full of friendly vegetarians that turns out to be a cult.
That is okay. Carry on. It's not done.
The We Say So organization attempts to storm their compound in an effort to clear out their forest, leading to an uncomfortable standoff that echoed current of the day.
I don't know if you're going to come up with it, but I know Dinosaurs ended with Earl Sinclair causing the end of the world, so this is highly in line with what Dinosaurs was capable of.
Oh, wait till you hear the rest of these, Josh.
All right, let's keep going.
We haven't even gotten started yet.
Okay,
we have Hurling Day. Earl is excited to throw his mother-in-law into the tar pits on her 72nd birthday, an old dinosaur tradition. But his teenage son, Robbie, decides to start a movement to end the tradition and save his grandmother.
It's like a happy alternate ending to Volcano. Is it Volcano or Dante's Peak where the grandma goes and saves everyone in the lava river?
I'm sure I do not know, Josh.
I don't know.
All right.
It's Dante's Pit.
Yeah, that whole disaster movie revival. I never quite got on board with it.
Yeah.
All right, so we also have an episode called A New Leaf. Robbie discovers a leaf in the woods that induces a state of euphoria.
Oh.
When Earl busts him, Robbie offers him some, and eventually the entire family gets so into eating the leaves that they stop going to work and school. At the end of the episode, Robbie gives a PSA about the dangers of drug use.
The dinosaurs get high?
Wow.
The dinosaurs get stoned?
I don't think they ever explicitly say what the leaf is.
I mean,
it could be like ayahuasca or something.
The leaf is marijuana. The dinosaurs
are cocaine comes from leaves, Josh.
The dinosaurs are getting blazed.
Is it better if it's cocaine, Jess?
I don't know.
Look, at the end of the episode, Robbie breaks the fourth wall to tell us that all drugs are bad.
Oh, man.
So it doesn't matter what the leaf is. It's just
it really doesn't. It's a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this one is this one feels real because I feel like I am tripping my way through a Jurassic Park podcast. So, all right, put a pin in that.
All right. Finally, we have Charlene's tail. Charlene begins to worry that she will never grow a tail, which is an important part of her transition to sexual maturity. Aww. When her tail finally comes in, Earl becomes anxious about the fact that his little girl is increasingly subject to the male gaze.
I feel like, Zed, the only one that doesn't have like a cultural message is like throwing grandma in the pit.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
There's a message there. I mean, honestly, it's got a moral.
Is that something we do?
Like, do we throw?
Is the message we've always done it that way is not an excuse to do something that way?
True.
Don't join a cult.
I miss the optimism of the 90s.
Yeah.
But being a vegetarian is good? I'm not sure what the message of the first one is. I mean, I'm a vegetarian, so I support it.
Yeah. But yeah.
I had no recollection of dinosaurs being such an activist program.
Yeah, I do recall Earl Sinclair triggering the apocalypse. So,
don't you remember the sexual harassment episode?
No!
Of this children's program?
Yes, in fact, I didn't even include it because I assumed you would all remember it.
Wow. No. I can't believe we didn't even talk about the baby.
God. Yeah, the baby was the worst part of that show.
Yeah, it's great commercials though. Great toy.
Indeed.
Okay, so vegetarian cult, throwing grandma in the pit. Doing drugs.
Don't do them.
and sexual maturity.
Yeah,
sexual maturity.
The awakening.
The awakening.
Yeah.
Now with 20% less throwing yourself into the sea.
I feel like the pit one is, I don't know. I could go with the cult or the pit. But this is an important decision, Zed. This determines whether we live or we die.
The pit feels like the storyline of Ted Day in Parks and Rec. I know you were just on Pawnee Radio back before you were eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
One of the last podcasts I did.
And that's what it makes me think of. If we're feeling like that's the outlier.
Let's go. Let's throw ourselves into the pit instead of grandma.
Okay.
Let's do.
We're
that.
Already dead. We might as well.
You know. Let's. We're play. I don't know. We got to just pick one. Let's go into the pit. We're going into the pit, Jess.
We're in it, and we're going further in it.
Well, you just dug yourself a deeper hole.
Because
that one's incorrect. You should have gone with your first impulse. It was the vegetarian cult.
Oh.
I bottled that one.
I'm sorry.
There was literally an episode where the factory brought in a new foreman whose his name was Al Harris. And he said that he's so good with the ladies, his nickname is Al Sexual Harris.
Oh.
And then there was a whole thing where he harassed one of his employees, and there was a news story about what Al Sexual Harris meant.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
No.
That was the 90s.
That went over my head as a child.
I'm surprised they never actually unloaded a Waco / Ruby Ridge allegory in dinosaurs because they were so topical otherwise.
Oh, man.
But, okay, bad news is it was a tie.
Better than we usually do, and yet not good enough.
Not good enough.
No.
I'm afraid that we are stuck here, but good news is, Josh, you're not actually dead.
What?
You're not actually dead. You're not in dinosaur hell.
I'm not?
I think you're having another dream.
Oh my God.
Josh. Wake up. Wake up.
Emily?
Are you okay?
Emily Fox, my wife and podcast partner on the Ben 15 Recap podcast and shows like Succession and Big Little Lies.
Dude, I don't know who else wakes you up in the morning.
Oh my God, what are we doing here? Well, yeah, well, of course, we always keep our podcast microphones recording during the night in case we say anything funny in our sleep.
We do not do that.
Don't we do that?
Is no,
that
we do? Don't.
Oh my gosh. Emily, I just had the craziest dream.
Yeah?
So I had this dream that because obviously the Post Show Recaps Patreon is launching and it's postshowrecaps.com/patron or postshowrecaps.com/patreon or patreon.com/postshowrecaps where you can go and you can find out more about being a patron of Post Show Recaps.
What about postshowrecaps.com/patron?
Don't get people confused.
What if
confused?
We started a Patron?
Listen, I'm open to it. Do they make non-alcoholic Patron?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Anyway,
I'll drink it for you.
Anyway, so we had this, long story short is I had a dream about something called Jurassic Park, the podcast. And it's gone wildly off the rails. I got eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and I had to. I watched Antonio get eaten by a T-Rex.
Oh, Dr. Grant!
And Dr. Grant was not there yet.
Did you dig through dung?
I think some people might think that getting this far into the podcast is like sticking your arm through a pile of Triceratops dung. But yeah, I guess here we are. Emily, you like Jurassic Park?
I do.
Do you have memories of seeing Jurassic Park as a youth?
My first date ever was to Lost World.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that we went and saw Lost World together in theaters as our first date.
Let me live.
All right. Liv, tell me, how did that go? What was your Lost World date?
I'm pretty sure that the guy I went with liked my best friend instead.
It's brutal.
Great introduction into the world of rejection.
You love the Lost. You're always a fan of the sequel. You like this. You like a sequel.
Literally, Jeff Goldblum's daughter does gymnastics to kill one of the raptors.
She kicks a velociraptor in the face.
Yeah.
Do you like The Lost World better than the first one?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, my God. Well, you agree with... I don't know if you agree, but one of the people in my dream had seen Lost World first before seeing the original Jurassic Park.
Julianne Moore?
Julianne Moore was not in my dream.
That's too bad.
That is a shame. Emily, I mean, I feel like, I don't know, the dream was kind of a nightmare because, like, I put out a podcast called Jurassic Park, the podcast, and we barely talked about Jurassic Park, the movie. I mean, I guess we did in certain spots and we did trivia and that was fun. But it feels like a big sprawling mess. I feel like we got to rectify this by at least coming up with something for the patrons of Post Show Recaps that is, going to be, a much more, focused movie podcast for people to listen to should they choose to sign on.
I like the sound of this.
Post Show Recaps Theater, you like the name?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Post Show Recaps Theater is going to be a movie club. We're going to do it weekly movie club. First episode, it's available in the Post Show Recaps patron feed right now.
I'm into it.
So you can listen to that and you can hear how that's going to go. And we're going to have a bunch of fun guests that are going to be popping up. Like, I don't know, like maybe Rob Sesternino, Antonio Mazzaro, LaTanya Starks, Kevin Mahadeo, Jessica Lease, Brooklyn Zed, Mike Bloom. In fact, I just got a text from Mike Bloom. He says, can you sign online? I need to talk to you about something very important.
What if he had the same dream you had?
No, that's stupid. That's not what's going on. All right, I'm gonna go talk to Mike. I'll talk to you on Post Show Recaps Theater pretty soon, Emily.
Yeah.
Also on the Pen 15 podcast with Lee McLaren.
Yes.
So I'll check in with you there and hopefully people will listen to us on that podcast.
I'm gonna go back to sleep now.
Okay, bye. Okay. Mike wants me to call him. Let me just sign in. All right, gonna give Mike a quick call. Here we go.
Josh Wiggler!
Hey, Mike. Oh, God. This is some crazy. So I just had the wildest dream that has ever been dreamt. I got to tell you all about it.
Wait. I know it's not in my character to interrupt, but I have to go first here. Because I know you say that, but like...
You reached out to me. It's the middle of the night.
Yeah. I mean, you might have the gold standard of dreams, but I, my friend, have the platinum. I have had, in my 30-plus years, the wildest dream in the world, and I think it's become real, Freddy Krueger style. Okay. I just had to call you because you were in my dream.
Me?
Yeah. So I have like podcast dreams all the time, but this one felt different because we had this dream. It's actually like in this exact same setup where you called me up and you said, I'm doing a podcast about Jurassic Park to talk about the patron, the Post Show Recaps Patreon, which launched
postshowrecaps.com/Patreon or
postshowrecaps.com/Patreon or patreon.com/postshowrecaps.
There's three different tiers that people can sign up for. You get a podcast feed for patrons only. You can get that at the $5 level. At the $10 level, you get access to the Discord. At the $15 level, you're earning your way towards a hat.
Yeah, you must have said that a lot, actually, because I feel like that was like beat for beat how it was in my dream.
Okay.
But you said, you know, you were podcasting with Rob about Jurassic Park and he had to step away to deal with an issue. And so, you know, I stepped in there as an understudy. I so eloquently compared myself to the Lost World Jurassic Park. And then we talked about that for a little bit because that was actually the first Jurassic Park movie that I saw, surprisingly. So and then we talked a bit about like just how awesome of a movie it is. I won't go into it because Jurassic Park is an awesome movie. And you know that. And I know that. And we talked about some of the characters. And then you said something along the lines of like, hey, we should come up with a Brant Steele of a Survivor season for Jurassic Park. And, you know, we called it a Grant Steele because we thought that was a funny ha-ha. And then we started talking about, you know, all these things about, oh, what would the idols be? What would the shelters be? Is living in a car technically a car curse? And I remember that we actually went to the website and we did the damn thing because we're both such audacious individuals, particularly when it comes to Brant Steeles. And so we made a Grant Steele Survivor Jurassic Park, Josh. It was 10 humans against 10 dinosaurs. And we played out the season of Survivor.
Okay. This is really similar to the dream that I just had, which, long story short, basically everything that you described up to creating the Grant Steele happened, and then some other crazy stuff happened with me. But in your dream, we actually played out the Grant Steele?
Yeah. Did we have some sort of like weird shared dream where we like were driving next to each other on the highway and then like Fast and Furious 7 style, I went one direction and then you went another one?
Oh my God, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
Which is right now.
That's really weird. Is it possible that we are still dreaming?
I mean, it's always a dream to podcast with you. I mean, quite possibly, because we got really, really into this Brain Steal. I mean, like I said, or sorry, Grant Steal. It started off dinos versus humans. I did millennials versus Gen X, because this is a battle of generations, technically, right? This is prehistoric versus modern day. I divided them into tribes based on the suffixes and prefixes of the sequel. So we had the Lost World tribe. We had the Fallen Kingdom tribe. We had the three tribe.
Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, exactly. and then we had the Dominion tribe, but pre-swap, the dinos got wiped out.
Really? Like a meteor?
They lost every single challenge. But there was still like some craziness going on as these dinos were sort of asserting their place. Like the first episode, there was a tie vote. And unfortunately, the first one out who you would have had to interview was the Triceratops giant piece of shit.
Oh, I'd have to rebrand the podcast Poo.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
But then there was some crazy stuff that happened, like the legacy advantage.
I mean, that's a pretty clear first vote, is you get rid of the giant pile of poop that isn't doing anything.
No, it's clearly boot number two, but they sort of jumped the gun.
True,
there.
Fair.
But the legacy advantage changed hands or claws like four different times. The T-Rex found an idol and then got voted out with an idol in her claws. Okay. I suppose. And then, so basically the pre-merge, basically the dinos got wiped out. Even the swap.
So the T-Rex got voted out early.
T-Rex got blindsided episode three unanimously with an idol in her pocket.
I've been haunted by a T-Rex all night long.
Yeah. Like, well, so she's able to, she becomes like the Bryce Isaiah of this season, getting voted out third unceremoniously. Okay. But basically what happens after the swap is they end up getting divided up like two dinos to each tribe, and they pretty much get wiped out. There is sort of a human civil war that happens at some point where Lex and Ellie are on the same tribe and they turn against one another, and Ellie's able to recruit the dinos to her side and vote out Ellie. But basically the merge ends up happening and it is four dinos to nine humans. But the humans are able to make a bit of a comeback, because basically the humans sort of have a schism develop where a bunch of basically the lesser characters look at John Hammond, Alan Grant, and Ian Malcolm, arguably the three most beloved characters, human characters from that first film. And they say, these guys are too big of a threat. And so they rope in the other dinos and create this big alliance, sort of like in like a Mata Amu versus Rotu 4.
But across species alliance.
Yeah. And so they're able to, you know, get things over on them a bit. The alliance doesn't stick together too much because for some reason the dinosaurs keep leaving the alliance for some reason. And the outsiders do try to strike back. They actually make an alliance with the remaining dinos. Then there's something like it was so crazy, Josh. There was like this middle stretch of the season where there were three ties in a row, and all of them involved Ian Malcolm.
Chaos theory.
Yeah. So one of them was a tie 4-4-2.
Chaos Ian.
Exactly. Between Ellie Sattler, Ian Malcolm. And I had two Raptors play because they always play in packs.
Sure,
Raptor 2 got voted out pre-merge, but Raptor 1 gets voted out here. Then the next episode was a 3-3-3 tie between Ian Malcolm, Little Tim, and the Dilophosaurus, aka the frilly poison spitting dinosaur that took poor Dennis Nedry. Dennis Nedry was also like his own chaos agent. He kept making alliances and then leaving them. So he really put himself out on an island. And then the next episode, it was a 4-4 tie between Malcolm and a mosquito, the mosquito that was in Amber, because basically the outsiders, Alan Grant and Ian Malcolm, had joined up with the Triceratops, one of the remaining dinos, and the lawyer, who had like this real like
Gennaro is still in this.
Yeah, he had a real buddy relationship with Alan Grant since day one on the Fallen Kingdom tribe, and so he brought him in, and they forced a 4-4 tie against the other ones. They vote again. 3-3, we get a fossil draw, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah.
And Alan Grant ends up getting rocked out. And so right after that, Ellie Sattler has won 5 immunity challenges at this point, which is insane.
Yeah, so she's challenge beast Ellie at this point.
Yeah,
which makes sense considering like how she kind of like rocks through the raptor nest.
Yeah, and I think at this point her competition is like little kids, John Hammond, a sick triceratops. So the competition isn't necessarily there.
Sure.
But unfortunately, Ian Malcolm's 9 lives finally ran out. He was voted out 5-2, but we had just gone to the finale. There were 6 human/dinosaurs left. And I woke up, I'll put in quotation marks, because as you said, we still might be in some sort of weird dreamscape. But Josh, I didn't finish the season. I don't know who wins this, and it is eating me at my core.
Yeah, I wish that there was like some sort of way to find out the... Wait, hold on. There's like this strange thing in my web browser. I have a BrantSteele.com/survivor tab. Mike, I think I have the finale.
You have the finale to the Grant Steele that you and I were running in a dream level below this the style of Inception.
Yeah, I think so. Hang on. Let me share my screen with you and let's see if I can.
Is this like going to be some sort of like ring thing where we watch it and we get cursed or something once we finish out?
I don't know. Maybe. So I'm sharing my screen with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's the finale part one.
Yeah, this is who ended up being in the final 6 when I woke up. Wow.
So it's Donald Gennaro, the lawyer.
Uh-huh.
Ellie Sattler.
Challenge beast.
The mosquito in Amber. Ray Arnold with both arms intact, it looks
yes,
like.
Yes, he's been giving people a lot of hands, but not in the literal sense.
Timmy is still... What a shock! Tim is still alive.
Yeah, youngest player in the game. He's still able to make it through.
And the only dinosaur left on the board is the sick Triceratops, who has yet to be medevaced.
Yeah, I think it was sort of a thing where Triceratops, Jenna Maraska style, was really able to lay low, and so nobody really considered it a big threat. It was just on the outs because it was the only one to vote with Ian Malcolm at the last tribal council. Mm. So I don't know, but I mean, should we keep going on this?
The thing is like, I feel like maybe if we are having a shared hallucinatory dream, we might not wake up until we finish the Grant Steele. So
wow.
I think we should probably...
We are both completionists in all sense of consciousness.
Like maybe this is the you didn't say the magic word.
Mm.
Maybe this is the way to bypass whatever nightmare spell Nedry has cast on us.
It's too bad Lex got voted out so early on. We could use her help here.
All right, well... Shall we dance? Do we want to play out the finale of Survivor Jurassic Park?
Absolutely. I mean, let's be the I guess in our situation, the Jeff Goldblum as his character from Thor Ragnarok, introducing the finale here with 6 final players. I hope I was able to set up as much as I could, but I guess we'll see these final 3 votes take place and we'll see a winner crowned in a simulation that took place in my dream.
Yeah.
And this may still be a dream, but we're carrying it out anyway. This has to take the cake for the weirdest dream I've ever had.
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely the weirdest dream I've ever participated in. And if anyone is like actually able to hear our dream and listen to our dream, maybe just add us hashtag Dino Dreams.
Dreams with a Z.
Yeah. Hashtag Dino Dreams with a Z, just to make sure that this is actually real, or is it a dream? I don't know. Okay, so Mike, if we get lost, you'll navigate us towards what's going on.
Yeah, I'll try to fill you in on the prehistory of this.
Sure. All right, so we're with the Dominion tribe. It's the final 6. We're at the finale. There is a hidden immunity idol that has been found by the mosquito in Amber. Is this a new development?
No, so the mosquito and Amber just found this idol. Basically, it went out in the 2 episodes ago, I believe, during the big rock vote where Ray had an idol and he let it slip out of his arms. He decided to play it, and that was the big tribal council again where Alan Grant got rocked out. So he protected himself, but the idol was once again hidden, and the mosquito, much like it was hidden in Amber once upon a time, was able to find this idol here.
Okay, so
at a crucial moment as well.
Yeah, how does the mosquito move?
I'm assuming it rolls.
Yeah, just like leans its full body weight, which I don't know would be able to move the encased amber, but there you go. The Triceratops has the legacy advantage, Mike. We are currently at the last spot that the legacy advantage can be used, I believe.
Right, so Triceralacinatops is going to assumingly play it here at the final six.
All right, okay, cool. All right, so coming into this, it feels like there's an alliance that is dominant, which is Arnold and Tim.
Mm-hmm. So Arnold and Tim, they had worked together briefly in the pre-merge alongside Nedry, and Nedry kind of left them behind, and then they came back together. But otherwise, it's sort of free reign. Like, even the dinos, despite being on the outs the entire post-merge, haven't really worked together. Really, neither have the humans. I guess Ray and Tim have been the only two that have been in pretty lockstep this entire time.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's proceed to the first challenge. It's the Tower of Power. And would you believe it? The blood-sucking lawyer wins immunity.
This is not good for Ellie. She has just won 5 immunity challenges. I would not be surprised if they decide to boot her here.
There is a reward to share. It's a steak dinner with wine. And the lawyer is going to try and buy wine and dine his way into this tight alliance.
Makes sense.
Between Arnold and Tim.
Well, hopefully Tim gets milk instead of wine.
Yeah, has Tim been truthful about his age, or has he come up with some cockamamie excuse as to why he can't drink?
Yeah, I mean, he basically said, oh, I got that nasty electric shock back there. I don't think alcohol is going to help.
Okay, all right. So that's what's going on over there. Amber still has the immunity idol. Triceralacina still has the legacy advantage. And the lawyer has left. What alliance did he have to leave?
So basically, the lawyer is sort of sticking out on his own, because up to this point, the current top six sort of had an alliance basically against Ian Malcolm. They said, enough is enough. Let's get the Chaos Agent out of here. And now the lawyer is sort of striking out on his own. He has immunity, and he says, I'm forming my own firm here. It's, you know, Gennaro and Triceratops. And so the two that are arguably the safest in this final six vote are going to vote together here.
Look at how far the lawyer has gone without worrying about a Triceratops anymore. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
He survives in the book. He's like a big character in the book. So
this could be interesting, though, because now this is a pair. Obviously, Tim and Ray are a pair. If Ellie Sattler you look at them and you see an obvious pair. If Ellie and Amber are able to work together here, we could see a 2-2-2 tie.
All right. Well, and it sounds like there's been a ton of ties this season, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, let's just tie another one on there.
All right. Let's see. Okay. Let's go to Tribal Council. Very exciting events. Final six. Gennaro is immune. The Mosquito has an idol. Amba has an idol, and Triceralacina also has a legacy advantage. So let's see what's going to happen here. The Amber has the idol. Triceralacina has the legacy advantage, and is going to use the legacy advantage. So
makes sense. It's going to like hobble up there because again, it's still very sick.
Yeah, it's really impressive that that Triceralacina is in the game still, because the Triceratops wasn't doing so well in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I mean, you would imagine that, like, due to how many challenges that the dinos lost initially, like, it would be a clear weak link. But I think there was just so much going on with the T-Rex finding idols and the piece of shit being there that basically Triceratops was able to skate by relatively unscathed.
Yeah, okay, so that's going to happen. Let's see the votes.
Oh, wait. The Mosquito is going to play an idol on Tim.
Wow, Amber is putting an idol on Tim.
Interesting move here, because the Amber had really not been in an alliance with Tim. I don't know if Amber is looking out for Tim, knows that there are votes coming his way.
In Tim sees the future, right? Mm. Tim is the best of us.
So it's like, children are our future. Yeah, we have to invest in that. Future.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Okay, so what a shock again.
So now half the tribe is immune right now. So it means either Ray, Ellie Sattler, or Mosquito, who ends up playing the idol on Tim rather than herself or himself or itself, is going to go here.
All right. Knowing the tradition of Brant Steele's, the Grant Steele will probably get rid of Amber here. So let's find out. Let's read the votes. First vote. Timmy does not count.
Good read.
Second vote goes to Timmy does not count. Third vote. Tricera Lucina does not count.
So I'm assuming Tricera Lucina did not tell anybody about that legacy advantage.
Wow. All right. The fourth vote. Tricera Lucina does not count.
Wow. This really could be a 2-2-2 situation.
Fifth vote. Ooh. Arnold. And the sixth and final vote. Hold on to your butts. It's Arnold.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so Jeff Goldblum, who I believe we had said would be the host of the Survivor Grant Steele. That's what we said in the dream, that my part of the dream anyway.
No, I remember hearing that as
well. Yeah, yeah. He snuffs Arnold's, and the torch snuffer is Arnold's severed arm.
Yeah, they had to cut it off and then use it, be like, give me a hand here, Ray.
So, you know, assuming that Arnold had to play this one one-handed the whole way through, pretty impressive that it took idling him out basically to get him out of here, and he was one-handed all the way. That's pretty good.
Let's see the votes. I'm really intrigued to see where these three pairs went.
So the lawyer voted for Tim. Mm-hmm. Ellie correctly voted for Arnold, and Amber correctly voted for Arnold as well. Arnold voted for Tricera Lucina, and so did Tim.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so we actually had so those two pairs we had mentioned beforehand basically gunned for each other, probably not knowing that the other party had an idol in their possession. Or at least I don't think Tim knew that that Amber had one. And so basically it was up to these two, a Mosquito and Ellie Sattler, to determine who would go here. And so Mosquito said, like, let me protect the odds here. I'll play one on Tim just to, like, make sure that this pair is protected. And we'll guarantee that Ray. Well, wait, they voted out Ray. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's Grant Steele logic.
I love it. Oh, it hurts so good. But I love it. They said, we're going to protect this pair, but we're going to vote out Tim's closest ally.
It's proof that we are just stuck in a simulation, if not a horrible nightmare. All right, so the final five. The lawyer, the blood-sucking lawyer, Ellie Sattler, Challenge Beast, Amber, the Mosquito and Amber, Tim is still here. What a shock. And the Tricera Lacinatops is also still in the game repping the dinosaurs. The idol has been found.
Ellie Sattler!
It got re-hidden, and Ellie Sattler has found the idol on the last occasion that an idol can be used. So it looks very likely that Ellie Sattler is going to be making it to the final four.
Yeah, definitely the final four. I would not be surprised if she wins immunity here once again and maybe ends up playing it on Tim, just because apparently these people love Tim. Tim is sort of like the JT in that perspective.
But it sounds like a really impressive run from Ellie Sattler so far at this point to even be making it to the Triceratops 5, baby. Ellie Sattler has the hidden immunity idol. The only alliance still in the game is the lawyer and Tricera Lucina.
But they're only 2 of 5 right now, so they have a tricky spot to navigate out of.
All right, so let's see what's going to happen. Immunity challenge time. And Tinny is going to win immunity. Draw the line.
Age prevails here.
Youth. The true... I mean, Tim's a millennial.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess if he was
Tim's
young,
like an actual millennial. Yeah.
Yeah. He was basically like he was born probably in like 1986 or something. So truly a millennial.
When was Joseph Mazzello is the actor in this dream? In addition to having a Brant Steele, if this is a dream, I also still have Google. He's 37, so he's like he's just like past the bubble. He's in sort of that. You know, you don't know exactly.
Yeah, he can sort of be like the Mari Takahashi of like on the human tribe, but like actually sort of not in that generation.
Millennial-esque, you know, he's close enough. All right, so let's proceed to going back at camp. There's really not a lot going on, except there's a little bit of a stronger bond between the lawyer and Ellie.
But it looks like the lawyer is casting his net wide. I mean, he has to be the main villain of this, right? Like, I know Nedry was sort of like an attraction, almost like a Mosquito.
It's always the man, right? It's like the legal armistice. I don't think that's the right word. It's the legal apparatus.
There you go.
Behind the man, that is the thing that is problematic.
No. Armistice is a character that, like Ray Arnold, also lost her arm at some point.
Good Westworld / Michael Crichton connection.
Oh, there you go. Didn't even realize that.
All right, let's go to Tribal Council. Let's see what's going to happen here at the Triceratops 5 Tribal Council.
So Tim is safe. We assume Ellie Sattler is safe. So I think Gennaro was really just trying to like weasel his way out of here. Now he has two guaranteed parties, considering one's a Mosquito and one's a Triceratops, that is not going to vote for him here.
Okay, let's find out how this is going to go. Ellie Sattler has that idol.
Ellie's going to play it.
Play it. That's smart. Okay. So let's read the votes, Mike. Jeff Goldblum is going to read the votes. Any votes cast against Ellie will not count. First vote goes to
Whoa.
Ellie. It does not count. Second vote goes to Ellie Sattler. It doesn't count.
Wow. Interesting that they chose to vote around now instead of when she lost to Beauty last time.
Third vote goes to the blood-sucking lawyer.
No, he thought he was so smart.
One vote for the blood-sucking lawyer. The fourth bone player leaving is indeed the lawyer. Eventually, the Tyrannosaurus Rex comes for us all, Mike.
That's very frightful from your prospects.
Oh, God. Ah, jeez.
But yeah, looks, I think the lawyer just got cornered here. He couldn't find it. He thought he had a raft going through a rather seedy, Amazon-esque territory. But unfortunately, he got swallowed up here by everyone else as finally his path ran short.
The lawyer, the tribe has spoken. The lawyer voted for Ellie. Obviously, Ellie voted for the lawyer. Emba voted for Ellie.
So Tricera Lucina turned on her formerly closest ally in the lawyer.
Wow. Okay. So we go to the final four with everyone having voted correctly, except for the one who is most responsible for this simulation even existing, the mosquito trapped in Amber. That
yeah, I wonder if that's sort of been his like methodology. Where I was like, you can't vote me out. Like, you certainly wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me.
Mosquito and Amber has definitely been grooming this jury speech for quite some time now. Let's see if she's going to get the opportunity to go there. So we're at the final four. Ellie Sattler challenge beast, Mosquito and Amber. Tim, what a shock! And Tricera Lucina tops here in the final four. Let's proceed. There's no more idols in the game, no more advantages. It's just immunity time, Mike Bloom.
Here we go. And the most important immunity challenge yet. And no fire making here because flares are distracting when it comes to dinosaurs. So they wanted to avoid doing it.
Okay. And the winner is of this immunity challenge, not of the whole thing. It's Tricera Lucina.
Wow, sleeping, literally sleeping the entire time for a last minute performance. The Triceratops guarantees a dinosaur will sit in the final three. Triceratops has avoided extinction for so long. She ends up sitting there at the end. Wow.
Tricera Lucina, a really underrated player. Is it possible pulling the Tyson Apostle thing of faking an injury all season long?
Yeah, she had her horn in a sling for the entire season.
Yeah, you underestimated her. Absolutely incredible performance by Tricera Lucina.
I don't know. This might not be good for Ellie Sattler then. I mean, okay. You got to look at the end. You got to look at these three and you got to be like, Ellie Sattler is by far the biggest threat here.
You would think so. You would think so. All right. So any alliances to speak of? There is a little bit of a closeness between Ellie Sattler and the Mosquito and Amber. Maybe the Mosquito and Amber trying to do some damage control from having voted for Ellie last time. And it's a pretty loose loyalty, so we don't know exactly how strong this is going
to
be.
It's only a two, but a two might mean something. If the two of them are able to come together and vote for Tim, we might get a 2-2 tie here. Remember, again, this is an outright vote.
Oh, I haven't forgotten. No. How could I forget? All right. Here we go. Final four, no fire making challenge because this is when Survivor was still Survivor. We are going to go through it now. No advantages. Any predictions, Mike, before we get to our final vote out of the season?
I think it's going to be Tim. I think they're going to say, listen, you know, it's the opposite of Survivor Cambodia, where they're like, this is a jury that would love to vote for a kid. Even Alan Grant would vote for a kid.
Probably would, right?
We got to get rid of him here. Okay. He's had so much. He's curried so much favor with the jury. We're playing idols for him, for Christ's sake.
All right, let's see.
For Crichton's sake.
Let's see what's going to happen for Tim. No items to be played. Votes have been cast. Jeff Goldblum reads the votes. First vote goes to Tim. Second vote goes to Amber. Third vote goes to Amber.
Okay, so this has got to be Tim or Amber goes home here.
The fourth and final vote.
It goes to Amber. Wow.
Amber
put herself, another one who put herself in a bit of a corner. She thought, it's sort of like in Millennials versus Gen
X.
It's
more that the sap crystallized around the mosquito and turned into Amber, which thus put the mosquito in a corner.
Right. I would say it's similar actually to Millennials versus Gen X, where like this would be the situation if Adam Klein got voted out at the final four, right? Like he was on the wrong side of the vote last time. And so it was very easy for the other three to just join up vote the mosquito out. The mosquito just had a vote on the jury and the lawyer since she didn't vote against him. So despite maybe the mosquito trying to make a plea to Ellie to at least tie it up, Ellie decided to not grant that request. She squashed that mosquito and its request to make it to the final three.
Wow. Okay. So we almost looked at a final tribal council that would have consisted of one human, one dinosaur, and the mosquito that started it all. But very wisely, I think they voted out the mosquitoes. I think that this is probably best for Tricera Lucina. Don't you think the lone dinosaur making it in to the final tribal council, you expect the humans maybe to split the vote?
I mean, maybe. Ellie and Tim have had very different stories. Ellie is someone who, again, was really out in front, winning a lot of immunities. Tim is someone who I think made more social connections, was a bit more under the radar, but probably more likable. And Triceratops has a bit of that underdog or under dino story. Coming back from when their tribe was a pile of shit and being able to, like, you know, make their way into the main alliance, break through this block of humans. And I
mean, it's an incredible story if it's Anderson-esque, if Tricera Lucina Tops' pile of shit was the first one out, and then Tricera Lucina Tops wins the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it really is an alpha and omega situation.
So we'll see exactly how that's going to play. Here's the jury. Dr. Grant, Dennis Nedry, the Dilophosaurus.
Oh, I don't like them sitting next to the jury.
That killed Dennis Nedry, the blood-sucking lawyer, Chaos Ian himself, John Hammond, who, you know, it's just impressive that he made the merge. Usually that's a pre-merge boot.
Right. Yeah, he had an idol, actually.
In the Papa Bear spot. Dr. Grant, it's real. It's happening.
As he waddles through the jungle.
Arnold, one-armed Arnold. Muldoon, clever girl to make it this far. And one of the two velociraptors squeaked into the jury booth. And, of course, the most recent member of the jury is the mosquito in amber. Let's find out what's going to happen next. If we proceed, are we going to see the votes?
I don't believe so.
Okay, all right. Well, let's find out what's going on.
I believe they're going to reveal the votes one by one.
Okay. Ellie Sattler, she has to give her final speech.
But since it's Laura Dern in this, she sort of like mumbles it very quietly and everyone has to lean in to hear her, especially the dinosaurs.
Yeah. What is it? God creates man.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Goldblum creates Survivor.
Man creates God. God creates woman. Woman inherits Survivor Jurassic Park.
I believe that's how the phraseology goes.
That's the speech that she's giving. Timmy is about to give a speech, but everybody rolls up their windows so they can't hear what he has to say. And Tricera Lucina Tops gives a very riveting.
And everyone's crying in the jury.
Yes, tears are being shed. Let's find out who is the winner of Survivor Jurassic Park. First vote goes to Tim. That's one vote, Tim.
Okay.
Second vote goes to Ellie. That's one vote for Tim to win, one vote for Dr. Ellie Sattler. Tricera Lucina Tops has received a vote. There will be no zero vote finalists. All the goats have been
eaten. Dino egg score.
All the goats have been eaten pre-merged by the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Fourth vote. Tim.
Okay, so we're 2-1-1 here.
Fifth vote goes to Tim.
Oh, 3-1-1.
Tricera Lucina.
Okay, Tricera Lucina. We got three votes Tim, two votes Tricera Lucina, one vote Ellie Sattler.
Seventh vote, Ellie Sattler.
Oh, 3-2-2. This could be close. There are 10 jury votes total, three left, 3-2-2.
Okay, the eighth vote goes to Ellie Sattler, Dr. Ellie Sattler.
Wow, so three votes Ellie, three votes Tim, two votes Tricera Lucina, two votes left.
Okay. Ninth vote goes to Tim.
That's okay.
Four
so
votes
here's
Tim.
So here's the situation. We're at 4-3-2 right now. If the next vote is anybody, so if the next vote is for Tim or is for the Triceratops, Tim wins. Mm-hmm. If the vote is for Ellie Sattler, we go to a 4-4-2 vote, and Triceratops, as the third placer, turns from Sarah Lucina into Laurel and decides the winner.
Okay. Well, let's see if that's what it's going to be. The 10th and final vote And the winner of Survivor Jurassic Park is Tim! What a shock!
Tim, of all the characters, he bested scientists. He bested badass hunters. He badassed prehistoric beasts. Wow. And Tim is the winner, showing that age is just a number.
Yeah, oh my god, that's absolutely incredible. Let's see how the votes shook out. Dr. Grant voted for Tricera Lacinatops.
I'm going to say a bit of a pity vote. He was the one to... I think him and Ellie were the two to really take pity on each other the most with that situation.
Dennis Nedry voted for Ellie.
I think you can appreciate her drive, right?
The Dilophosaurus voted for Tim. It's like Tim really understood me. Tim took the time to get to know me.
Every single spot on my frill.
He knew every single detail about me. He wasn't afraid. He knew that when I stuck up my weird little neck things, that it meant that I was in a bad mood and was hangry and didn't want to be talked to. The Bloodsucking Lawyer voted for Ellie.
It's that sort of like game respects game, right?
Yep. Dr. Malcolm voted for Ellie, obviously.
Well, I mean, he's got a bit of a holding a flare for her.
Yeah, carrying the flare for Ellie. John Hammond voted for the Triceratops.
I think that makes sense. This is the dino representation. John Hammond would, I think, have more investment in one of his creations.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The mosquito and Amber voted for Tim. I think the mosquito notes that Tim was the one of the three finalists who's most grateful for the mosquito's sacrifice, being encased in Amber, being the person responsible for dinosaurs existing in the world of Jurassic Park.
And also, mosquito protected Tim at the final six. Clearly, there are some good feelings there. And also, that mosquito vote might have been the one that helped Tim win the game as well.
It's possible. All right, and Arnold voted for Tim. It seems like
they were buds
all the way through. Muldoon voted for Tim. It's like that kid was a badass.
Yeah, exactly. I think he appreciates what Tim was able to do to weather both living in Jurassic Park and the game. And the Velociraptor also has respect for Tim. I mean, Tim did trick it by hitting it with a nice, cast iron oven door in the kitchen that one time.
You know, I think we are seeing that key to Tim's win, because it's a big split across the board, right, of all of the various human jurors voting for either the Triceratops or for Ellie, but Tim curried the favor of all the non-human jurors.
Wow.
And was able to use his intellect, his empathy for the dinosaurs to be crowned the winner of Survivor Jurassic Park, with, of course, Velociraptor 1 being the fan favorite because it's the coolest dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Velociraptors are a fan. It's just so badass. Everyone's like, oh, damn. When's the Velociraptor coming back?
Yeah. Any other stats worth noting?
Yeah, let's get some Ellie Statlers.
Tim is Ellie Statlers. Let's see. The pile of shit was the first one voted out.
So Ellie Statler ends up winning 6 challenges total, 5 immunity wins.
That's amazing. 4 challenge wins for Tim, including 1 immunity challenge win for Tim. Won 3 rewards across the way.
Malcolm received 26 votes.
Yeah. Wow, you had a crazy dream, dude. This is pretty wild. Even the pile of shit got 13 votes cast against it, and it was the first one voted out.
Yeah, even by Grant Steele's standards. And also, look at those idols. I think it was like 6 or 7 idols found in general. Like, I mean, listen, these people are used to digging, considering some of them are paleontologists, but that's that's ridiculous.
Mike, if that hasn't woken us up and brought us back to reality, I don't know what's going to do it. This grand finale of a Grant Steele, if that doesn't wake both of us back up and allow us to get back to our duties at post-show recaps, where you and I podcast about Lost every single week on Down the Hatch, and you are also podcasting about Star Trek coming up with Jessica Lise pretty soon, and Jessica Lise and I are also podcasting about The Walking Dead pretty soon, and it's a lot of free content that you can help support should you wish by going to postshowrecaps.com/Patreon or postshowrecaps.com/patron or patron.com/postshowrecaps, then I don't know.
I mean, I have
a point to make, but really it's just like, if we're not awake to resume those duties, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, speaking of the first boot, lots of duties there.
Yeah. I just got a text from Rob.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize. I mean, I guess I would say, wow, I can't believe you get texts and dreams, but we just played out a Brent Steele simulation, so anything's game here.
I think this might be real. I think we might be awake. I think this podcast might actually be recording.
Wait, so we've been sitting here for the past, like, 40 minutes in reality talking about this dream?
I think it's possible. Yeah, because I just got this text from Rob. He says, yo, call me. I'm ready to resume.
All right. Well, let me see if this is real. I'm going to get another tattoo. And if I feel the needle in my arm, that means that it's definitely not a dream.
All right. Well, either way, you and I will talk soon for Down the Hatch, and people can look forward to that podcast.
I'm sure people want to view the whole Grant Steele. I'm sure we can put a link up there somewhere.
Yeah. If there's a show notes, if you're listening to this podcast, if this is real, in the show notes, we have a link to the Grant Steele that you can see it all for yourself. I'm going to go call Rob real quick. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Josh, are you there?
Rob, it's Wiggler. Hey, so you are not going to believe everything that's gone on. I've had the wildest dream. I've had the wildest time. I had this dream that, because we were so excited about the Post Show Recaps Patreon program that we've just launched, that we created a Jurassic Park, the podcast, where you and I got on the line and we talked about Jurassic Park for 15 minutes, but then you had internet issues, and so you had to go. And so I called Mike Bloom, and Mike Bloom said that he would be able to fill in, and we started talking about Jurassic Park for a while, and then we came up with this really funny idea for a survivor simulation called a Grant Steele Survivor Jurassic Park. And then right as we were talking about that, he had to leave, and then I started getting like a little in my own head about like, oh man, is this ethical? Is this a cool thing to be doing, to like be putting out Jurassic Park, the podcast, when it's really, we just want to tell people about the Patreon, have a good time, but tell them about the Patreon. And just as I was having that moral dilemma, Antonio Mazzaro showed up. He said he was frozen in amber and he was hanging out in my guest room. And then he thawed out to talk to me about Jurassic Park for a little while. And it was really fun because I haven't heard from Antonio on a podcast in a minute. And it was super, super great and really, really, really fun. But then he got eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex, like the lawyer from Jurassic Park, like literally like the lawyer from Jurassic Park, because he was on a toilet. And then he got eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And then I guess I screamed and woke up. And I was surrounded by Kevin and LaTanya of the Lovecraft Country podcast. And Kevin and LaTanya told me that it was okay to be scared about Jurassic Park because Jurassic Park is a scary movie. And we embarked on a really great conversation about Jurassic Park and how Jurassic Park isn't for everybody for a lot of reasons. And I thought that it was a really illuminating conversation, as all of my conversations with Kevin and LaTanya are. Except then at the end of that, I got eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Apparently there was a T-Rex standing behind me the entire time and it ate me. And then it wasn't a dream because I was dead. I was in dinosaur hell, and Jessica Lise was there, and Brooklyn Zed as well from the Mole Patrol podcast. And Zed and I had to compete in a dinosaur trivia contest in order to get out of dinosaur hell. But then it turned out that that was a dream. All of that wasn't real. And I woke up next to Emily Fox, my wife, my wonderful wife, who is my co-host on the Pen 15 podcast and so many other podcasts, and is going to be my co-pilot on Post Show Recaps Theater, the weekly movie club that we're going to be doing each and every week at postshowrecaps.com/patron if you become a member of the Patreon program. And she was like, hey, you're crazy. Also, remember in Jurassic Park 2 when the kid did gymnastics to fight the raptors? That was wild. It's like, yeah, that was wild. Oh, by the way, Mike Bloom just texted me, and so I called Mike Bloom, and he, weirdly enough, I was about to tell him about my dream, but he told me about his. He had a dream where we had done a survivor simulation. The Grant Steele was real, and it was wild, and all the dinosaurs got wiped out really early on, except for a Triceratops. And then we got to the finale, and he didn't have the finale, but then I looked at my computer and my web browser and I had the finale. So he and I were able to actually record the ending of our Grant Steele. And guess what, Rob? Timmy won. And that was crazy because in the dream, you hated Timmy so much. You had so much anger towards Timmy, and so many people along the way really were bagging on Timmy. And yet Timmy ended up being the winner of the Grant Steele. And then I got this text from you that you wanted to talk. So, it's just all so crazy. It's just like one of the weirdest dreams into true series of events that I've ever encountered. Anyway, that was a lot of word soup. What do you think about all that?
Josh, all that is super interesting, but I've got some news for you that Rob has stepped away from his phone, and this is Casey Kasem.
Oh, Casey. Oh my God. Oh, I'm so sorry to bother you with all of that. That must have been a very convoluted, annoying story to have to listen to.
Josh, I've been ranking your worst podcast ideas of all time. Uh-huh. And I could tell you that this one has come in at number one.
Okay. Do I get a bad hat for it at least?
No. In fact, if you want to survive, you need to sing for your life.
Oh, God. You mean I have to wand off my way out of Jurassic Park, the podcast?
That is the only way off the island.
All right. If you say so, Casey, I'm a little rusty at this. Just give me a second to figure out what I'm going to sing. Okay, let me just pick up my guitar, see how this goes. La da da da. Sorry. La da da. Some of us even got killed. just kidding. We're alive. Still, it's time to say goodbye. Or perhaps it's time to say hello as post-show recaps prepares to grow. Go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps if you want to support the podcast. There's a brand new feed just for patrons' needs. A movie club each and every week. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. I sure hope that you'll join the fun with me. But if you can't join, don't worry about that. All the podcasts that you love, they're still
was the Jurassic Park theme song by John Williams Hammond. Don't forget to go to postshowrecaps.com/patron to become a patron of Post Show Recaps. And until next time, keep your feet on the ground and your hands off the table where my glass of water seems to be shaking. That's weird. That's bizarre. Oh my God. What is that?
Thank you to everybody who listened to this ridiculousness. I hope that you had a decent time. I hope you had a fun time. If you've made it this far, I assume that you were at least curious to see how it would end. I want to thank everybody who has lent their time to this podcast, from Rob Sesternino, who is such a good sport, Mike Bloom, the great Antonio in the Sky, Antonio Mazzaro, Jessica Leese, Brooklyn Zed, LaTanya Starks, Kevin Mahadeo, Emily Fox, all of you who listen to this, everybody who's been listening to Post Show Recaps, whether you are OG, have been listening since, gosh, almost 7 years ago, 7 years ago in January when we launched this thing, or if this is your first time listening, what a weird way to start. We're so grateful for all of you. None of this would be possible without all of you, and these shenanigans were designed to make you happy in a time where that can be hard to come by. So hopefully you had some fun. Plenty more fun adventures to come in the future here on Post Show Recaps. As we say in our intros, we're just getting started.